gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the internet. Here in the basement of the Great Hall of Justice are the most powerful forces for good podcasting ever assembled. This is the DC Superpowers Podcast.
This looks like a job for Superman.
To the Batmobile.
My name is John Jones.
I am the Green Arrow.
Hey, super friends, welcome back to the DC Superpowers Podcast, issue number 49 for New Comic Book Day, March 29th, 2017. And actually, you know what that means, Vernon? Happy birthday,
we're one
friend.
Issue away.
Well, no, look at the date, man. Happy birthday. Issue number one of DC Superpowers Podcast came out March 31st, 2016.
Oh, man. We've been doing it this long?
Yeah. This would be our birthday issue. And we're only one away from issue 50.
So this is going to be a good issue. We got the Justice League trailer for a birthday gift, right?
Oh, yeah. And Super Friends, here in a little bit, we can't bury this. We actually waited till Saturday to record because we knew that today this Justice League trailer was going to drop.
So thanks, Zack Snyder, for giving us a head up. We really appreciate that.
Yeah. I would have been upset if we recorded at a normal time and then all of a sudden, oh, wait, the trailer came out like right after we dropped the episode.
I feel like we would have to do a little 20-minute podcast for it if that happened.
Yeah, do a microburst.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we don't have to because we have the show.
And
we have it on the show today.
Right. I'm glad they put it out so early. At first I thought it was going to be around like 8 o'clock. Dude, it was going to wait it out. But no, I woke up and clicked on YouTube and it was already up there. I was so happy.
Well, also something special for this issue is since the trailer dropped and we wanted to possibly get some live interaction with some of the listeners, we're actually broadcasting for the first time since we started this. I remember the first couple of issues we broadcasted live, but we're actually broadcasting live on Mixlr.com. And we even have a couple listeners in the chat. Give a shout out to Fire Rose and my boy Bart just logged in too. Hey, what's up, Bart?
Sweet. Hey, Bart.
So we're just getting this off and rolling. Now, most of this issue is going to be the Justice League trailer. But we do still have, we got to follow up to our mandate. We say that we're going to bring you all the news, reviews, and previews from across the multiverse. So we're going to still get your previews and your reviews. But most of the news section today is going to be dedicated to that Justice League trailer and to the DC TV shows because there was some big stuff happened on the TV this week.
And see, that's happens on Mixlr. The TV show's really good. We got a good little crossover, too, for a two-parter.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. Yeah, the second part of it, I don't know if I'd call it really a two-parter, because it was just like they did last time, to where they...
Yeah, with Supergirl.
Supergirl, you get the last 3 minutes, is like, all of a sudden, hey, look at this, so you can leave.
And every time I click on the episode list, it always goes, this was part one, then Flash is part two. It's like, well, it wasn't really that big of a part for Supergirl.
Yeah. Well, also, if you look at the way they did Flash, they did it again to where they basically replayed everything that happened on Supergirl on Flash. So you didn't have to have it at all.
But they had to get her in there somewhere.
Exactly.
Still glad she's connected so they can do that.
So, later on in the show, we may have someone stepping in as a guest to hang out to talk the Justice League trailer with us. But until he calls in, I'm not going to mention who it is.
Well, since my buddy's right here at the moment, Ty's sitting in with us. Say a little bit, Ty.
Hey, it was good, man.
I know he's been your silent partner on this a couple times. So finally he's going to actually talk a little bit.
He just watched the trailer when he came over here today, so he's got a little bit of input, I think, too. So, he gave us some of the scenes, too, which is, you know, a little weird for the past stuff we've seen from DC to have a bit of a laughter time besides Suicide Squad.
Yeah, this actually had a couple jokes in the trailer, but we'll get to that in a minute. Let me bring up the... since I had to restart the computer, I lost my link to the one I was looking for. But let's jump right into the TV news here in just a second. Like, give me just a minute to bring up my link. I had it open, and then Mixlr made me have to reset everything.
Yeah, Mixlr was being a little weird tonight. We even put out a tweet, guys. If you're on there, thanks for waiting for us. Mixlr just didn't cooperate. Even Ty tried to log on there and give us a little difficulties.
Still giving me difficulties.
Really?
Ah.
Yeah, at this moment.
Well, you have it up and running, don't you, Vernon? So you can see the chat room?
Yeah, I got it on my phone. That's why I had to mute it. I started playing, and if you guys heard in the background, that's the only device we have over here that's actually working is my cell phone.
Well, let's jump right into Supergirl, because Supergirl had a pretty big episode. The last episode, we were teased with Terry Hatcher and Kevin Sorbo showing up, and we find out they're the king and queen of Daxam, which I called a couple months ago, but then listening to other podcasts and stuff, I think the entire internet called this way back in the day. And they, it looks like everybody was...
At least we were on our own. We didn't listen to other people. We came up with that ourselves.
Yeah, it was kind of obvious, though, that Mon-El was going to be the prince. But we find out he is the Prince of Daxam. They've showed up to take him home. And it seems like they actually showed up thinking he was being held prisoner on Earth.
Mm-hmm. They didn't know. They couldn't figure out why would our son just stay away from us. He must be being held prisoner, not knowing he does not like the way you guys raised him.
Yeah, well, there's a before we get into that, there was a couple of shout-outs or things in here that actually reminded me of the Man of Steel. Now, the way they actually talked to Earth, did you notice that? It was almost the same technology that Zod uses in Man of Steel.
And, yeah, they're very close, so that made sense. I caught that, too. I was like, wait a minute, wasn't this in Man of Steel? But that was a good little Easter egg they threw in there.
Yeah, they're showing that a little bit of solidarity, looks like, between the TV and the movie universes. A little bit. Not much, but enough that you can see that they have the same general idea in their same universe.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good method to follow if they're going to keep pumping out the movies and the TV shows like they are.
Oh, yeah.
And so, we also get a little bit of that later in the trailer. We'll discuss that in a second, though.
Oh, yeah. We get all kinds of good stuff in that trailer. But there's a couple of big points. I actually went over to Supergirl.tv. Which I've found from another show is actually a really good site for Supergirl news. But they had some talking points, like 7 points on things that happened during this episode. But the main ones we got, there's 2 main storylines that happened during this. Now, we get the whole storyline of the Meet the Parents storyline.
Mm-hmm. Where? Oh, man, that was hilarious. I felt like this was Meet the Blockers.
Yeah. Well, the Mon-El, or... The Daxamites are up there. They're saying, give us Mon-El or we're going to basically destroy your planet. So
yeah,
eventually...
it was a big threat.
Go ahead.
Geos kind of goes head first in there. Mon-El knows what's going on, but he's not going to tell him until the last minute.
Yeah. But Supergirl flies up to try to talk to them and immediately is attacked and repelled. So
yeah.
But eventually Mon-El's like, you know what? No, I'm just going to take it. I'm going to... transport the ship and find out what's going on, what they want from me, the whole time knowing who these people are.
Right. They still think he's looking like a hero, not knowing he's related to them very close.
And what we find out is he's been lying to everybody this whole time, which mm-hmm. I'll talk about in a little bit, because Kara's stance on this is a little hypocritical if you look at it, but...
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too, but as he said, with her people, it's a tendency they seem to have.
Yeah. So, but he transports up, and Kara at the last minute jumps into the beam with him, and they transport up to the ship. They find Mom and Dad. And it's mm-hmm. one of those whole, hey, Mom and Dad, meet my girlfriend things.
And, yep, she's not of our race either.
Well, they've never said it in here because it's not the same, but in the comic books, Daxam is actually a colony of Krypton from years ago.
I thought I'd seen that somewhere when I was looking Mon-El up, even with the whole Green Lantern thing.
Yeah.
But it was, they're not really playing up on that.
It was so long ago in the comic books that the Daxamites developed a little bit differently and evolved a little bit different. That's why, like, the Daxamites are allergic to lead, not kryptonite.
Okay.
There's little things like that that made them different. That, and obviously, their whole personality and the way they treat everything, the whole party boy attitude, the frat boy thing. Which is played up well.
When he first came in there, he sounded like a college jock.
Yeah. So, but it looks like once you meet Terry Hatcher and Hatcher and Sorbo's characters, that the whole planet's like that. Because they're doing the same thing.
And the reason I think they were like that, because a lot of them were slaves, weren't they?
I don't remember. I don't know.
Because you're saying a lot of them were inhabited by slaves. But they did help them, to be honest. They didn't give them their freedom. They're like, hey, you lived on a planet that was less of ours, so we're going to take you on our planet. You're basically a slave because you don't have any freedom, but you'll have fun. But as she said, they also kept the people happy by getting them intoxicated all the time.
Exactly. They just kept the population drunk so they didn't care what was going on.
Right.
That always worked.
What was that, Ty?
That always works.
Oh, yeah. So, but the second storyline in here, we get more of Wynn and Lyra. And Lyra has this idea. They're outside the National City Museum of Art. And Lyra's like, hey, I got an idea. You like tech and stuff. Why don't we break into the museum here and have some fun in the museum instead of out here on the sidewalk?
You can always swindle him in by doing something like that. Plus, he's head over heels for this girl. So she says, hey, let's have a little quickie in there and look at some paintings and we'll have fun, right? You're a tech guy. Hack this for me.
No.
Well, then we get back to everybody else. But later on, we find out at that same night, for some reason, they have a traveling Van Gogh exhibit. And Van Gogh's Starry Night disappeared from the museum that night.
The same night they were there. What a coincidence.
And Maggie Sawyer brings in Wynne because she has a video of Wynne running around in the museum at after hours the same night this was stolen. But just Wynne. So we find out that it was a whole setup. Now, some of the points they brought up here is going to explain some of these other ones. But back to that Supergirl.tv wrap-up they had. The points they brought up about the episode were, number one, Supergirl's attack on the alien ship. It says, this gave us flashbacks to Star Trek. On one hand, we always wanted to captain a starship. And on the other, we wanted to have superpowers, but never thought we would have both. This is the closest we got to seeing the two interact. The ship had some interesting weapons. Like, what kind of starship had a weapon that is meant to incapacitate one person? Pretty interesting. Then it says, the graphics of Supergirl landing there was amazing. The next one we talked about a little bit, Mon-El's parents. They didn't beat around the bush with this one. Supergirl gave us the answer we were looking for before the first commercial break. With that, we know for sure that Mon-El is royalty. His parents are the king and queen, and Daxam has a warship. What we don't know right now is where do they go from here? Number three they had was Wynne gets set up, which we just saw. We were really liking Lyra, but this was a twist we didn't see coming. She totally set him up. At least that's what it looks like. Thank goodness Wynne is friends with Alex and Maggie. Otherwise, it would have been an open shut case that he got it, that it was there.
Yeah,
because for some reason
the crazy dude running around talking to somebody that wasn't there.
Yeah,
she literally looked invisible.
That's because Lyra, we find out, is an alien race that cannot be caught on video or surveillance.
Vampires.
That's what it looks like. Next up, number four, we talked about this a little bit. The dinner with the family. Dinner with Mon-El's family couldn't have gone worse. The story of Mon-El's escape from Daxam was a big reminder to Kara where Mon-El came from. As she said, it'd be one thing if you just came from a cruel world. It's another thing when you lied about it. It was also a big reminder how Mon-El used to be. Furthermore, Daxam survived. As in, the atmosphere is returning now, and they could actually go back to Daxam. That could be a home for refugee Kryptonians, too, possibly.
And that was the thing that was getting me. At first, I'm like, Kara, you need to stop being so mad at him. Then they showed his flashback, what he actually did on that planet. He did not help anyone on his way out.
Well, you look, it kind
people
of...
just dying around
him. And the way
him.
They showed the flashback, though, it looked like he turned to try to help people here and there, and his guard keeps pulling him and saying, leave him.
See, that was the thing I was looking at, too, but I'm like, I still blame him on that. I don't care if your guard's telling you to hurry up get in the ship or not. If people are dying literally 2 inches away from you, help them. There was buildings falling on people, rubble falling on people. The girlfriend he had in his bed or whatever she was, she died from the ceiling falling on her. I'm like, you could have dragged her at least out of the bed.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing was, if you remember that part, he gets up out of the bed and dragged out of the bed. She says, don't leave me. And the next line is the bodyguard saying, leave her.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm laughing at that. It was so wrong, but yeah, he was the prince. He was royalty. He could not. They didn't want him to do anything. They wanted to make sure he was okay, which is fine. That's what they would do with the president too. But compared to what he wanted to do and what his family actually had him doing, he's a completely different person now.
Yeah. So the next one we have up here, number five, was actually Lyra captured. Now remember, they find Lyra is actually living in a trailer park outside National City, and when Wynne goes and confronts her. It looks like it's just him saying, hey, did you set me up? She says, well, no, I didn't set you up. And as three aliens show up to, and attack him, luckily he had brought Alex and Guardian with him.
Yeah, I was gonna say before that, she kind of showed how cruel she can be, at least pulling a poker face. He actually told her, look her in her eyes. Look me in my eyes. Tell me that you didn't feel anything when you did it to me. I didn't feel a thing when I set you up and tells him to walk out. I'm like, yep, well. Now here comes his backup.
Exactly. Well, he brought along Guardian and Alex. And then the funny thing is they pointed out here, the cool thing with this, with the effects team, the practical effects team actually took and split an RV in half so that when the alien weapon goes off and cuts the RV in half, it actually breaks off into two pieces. That's a lot of work for one shot. That's awesome.
Yeah, it is.
So the next one up.
On TV.
Yeah. Well, we find out that from there that Lyra actually isn't doing this of her own accord. She actually is setting people up, but it's for someone else. Oh, hey, we got someone calling in. Hang on just a second. Let's see what we can do here. Mike. Hello. Are you with us?
I am with you.
Hey, Mike, you are live on Mixlr.com and on DC Superpowers Podcast.
What's up, gentlemen?
What's happening?
How you doing?
We're in the process of talking Supergirl.
Supergirl, okay.
So, how you doing? You have a good day at work?
It's a lot better now. I'm walking to the car, so I apologize for any potential wind noise.
Hey, no problem, man.
You're on the walk while you're going here.
You know what they say, dead man walking. It's that home release program.
Oh, yeah. Let's get back. We're gonna finish up Supergirl. We're going to talk the DC TV shows, then we'll get into the trailer here, if you got time to stick around for a while.
Yeah.
Okay.
I got the car ride home.
So, anybody doesn't know, this is Mike from the Weeby Geeks Network. He's also my co-host over on Wookiee Radio and one of the hosts of Mighty Marvel Geeks.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, the last couple things they had on this list was Wynn plants the trap. Now, we found out Wynn actually, they had taken Lyra prisoner, and Wynn was still trying to figure out if she actually ever cared for him or not.
Yeah.
So, but he sets a trap and doesn't tell her at all, because they still, she, remember where I was at there, was she was being set up. She has to get these art pieces, or else this alien art thief or art seller is going to kill her brother.
And he's a pretty bad guy. I'm like, oh, he's just going to be alien stealing stuff. No, he's got some power behind him, too, enough to seem like he could go against a Kryptonian, even.
Exactly. So she has to get this painting to him or her brother's dead. So Wynn sets her up and sets the trap and goes and says, okay, I got the painting. I'm going to let you go. Let's go get your brother. They go meet the guy. And of course, he finds this is a fake painting. At which point,
I would have made it look exactly like that painting. He just gave him something completely different. He would have really had to try to spot out the difference on mine.
Oh, I didn't see it. Did they actually show the painting that he gave him?
That he opened up.
You see like the upper corner. But it's obvious with the canvas that it's on that it's not the right painting.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, at which point it doesn't really matter anyway because Guardian and the DEO shows up.
Yeah, they all show up and they just really take him down. It became a SWAT team. This looks
basically
like something from Law and Order or something.
Yeah, this is a straight up classic Sting move. So, go ahead.
But there was no baseball bat though. If it's a classic Sting move.
Well, and no one was wearing the face paint. Guardian had the face shield, but that was it.
Someone needed at least a little bit more white face paint.
Yeah. But that wraps that up. They've got the guy there. We get back to Kara and Mon-El, and we find out Kara, after all this is done, Mon-El has finally told his parents, they want him to go back to Daxam to be the face of the monarchy in Daxam now. Now that the planet was destroyed under his parents' watch, they want him to go back and be the leader of a new Daxam.
Mm-hmm.
He told them, no, shove it. I want to stay here on Earth and be a hero with everybody else, because he's changed.
Which I respected that a lot about the character. I was thinking to myself, okay, his girlfriend don't want him no more. His parents want to do something that he doesn't want to do. So he might just go with the parents anyway and be a ruler once again. But no, he said, nope, I'm being a rebel. I don't want you guys to do what you were doing. It's bad. We need to stop this for our people. And plus, I'm still going to go back on Earth and still try to rekindle stuff with her, even though she knows I lied to her. So I'm like, you know what? You're being a real good guy. You deserve that Green Lantern ring you're supposed to get in the comic books.
Well, the problem is, when they get back to Earth, Kara is done. She's done with him. She doesn't want him to, she doesn't want anything else to do with him. She breaks up with him. This gets into the part where I think it's kind of a little hypocritical, because he's been lying about where he's come from for this whole time he's been there, but her entire life she lied to everybody she knew about who she is.
Exactly, and that's why, was it the mother that said, you guys can be a little hypocritical, and what'd she say, you stand by your beliefs a little bit too strong sometimes?
Yeah, so
it's like, hey, you know, you Kryptonians, you really do that, because I had to think about what even Superman does with his villains. He doesn't really give them sometimes the benefit of the doubt, even if they're trying to change.
Yeah, but I think there's a slight difference, though.
Yeah.
You know, with Kara, it's protecting her from the, you know, the realities of what happens if people find out she is an alien. Here is a situation of, everyone in the DEO knows she's an alien.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's that loyalty and discretion factor there. So Mon-El knows that she's Kryptonian. But to do what he did with her when they're in a safe environment to expose that.
He still doesn't say anything.
He already assumes she's going to judge him before she even, based on his past, without being truly allowed to be judged proper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think so. Part of this was he got caught in his own lie. He didn't initially he did this because didn't want people to judge him as being the Prince of Daxam.
Right.
But eventually it's like when it came time to come clean, he saw himself as being kind of stuck, I think. Which this is actually a theme that goes through both of this episode and the Flash episode with the whole thing about her trusting Mon-El after he lied.
Yeah.
Because we find out at the end of this episode the whole morality story ending is that Wynn forgives Lyra for lying to him about and using him because he still loves her and she actually loves him. Which is the way Kara should be going also, but she has to figure this out. It eventually takes the Music Meister to figure that out for her.
Which I did not see the way they're going to end that coming. I was like, okay, this is going to be a little strange. She reminds me of another character from Superman's world.
Yeah, well, the very end of this episode, possibly. Well, the very end of this episode, we find out, we get to the whole thing that's setting up the crossover, and we find John Jones tells them, hey, there's this, and I don't know, and for some reason, maybe because it's setting up a chance to get across to the other world, this happens to be the point where Wynn is talking about Cisco's dimension jumper device.
What coincidence.
It says, oh, this thing is awesome. I could work with Cisco here. As this new prisoner is being brought in, they have a special prisoner that they don't usually work with, and then they don't say his name or anything, but as he comes in, he looks, says a couple things to Kara and hypnotizes her. She passes out. He's like, well, I'll see you guys later. And the cuffs drop off. He walks over to the edge, opens the breach, and says, I got to go find the fastest man alive, and jumps through the breach.
And now, correct me if I'm wrong here, but didn't he open up that portal and left the device with him? He was really a big villain. He would take that with him so they couldn't follow him.
Exactly.
So that's something I picked up. Like, that was a little too convenient. I don't know if that's the show or something bigger plot.
Well, he does talk about it back. And I think the whole purpose was for them to follow him.
Yeah,
because that's the whole premise of the Flash. But I don't want to rush ahead.
Well, we're getting to that. Yeah, exactly. This was actually we find out later that he did this to set up what we got in the Flash. So, but that's the end of Supergirl for this week, which I thought was a pretty good episode.
I did too.
But why don't we go ahead and get into the one that people have been waiting on, for good or for bad, for a couple of months now? We actually got our musical crossover finally.
Yeah, just finally came on.
Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
See, I enjoyed this episode.
Maybe because I hate musicals. I've been telling Ken this. This was the one episode I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to feel about it. I really do. I despise musicals. But this episode I liked. I don't know if it's because it was a comic book musical or what, but I enjoyed it. And the actors blew me away. I didn't know they had voices like that.
Yeah. Well, I knew they had the voices because a lot of the actors have either been on Glee or they're Broadway guys to start with.
Yeah. Exactly. I just, like I said, I've never been to musicals, so I never watched those shows at all. I don't know how they even sound. Yeah. So I know if they're like, oh, they can sing a little bit, they got some chops.
Together,
they blew me away. I didn't think they were that good. Or I didn't know they were going to be that good.
Yeah, they worked together before.
Well, I think it was the way it was pieced together that bothered me. It's like, okay, it's getting super campy. it's like, okay, now we're going to do a song because we can.
But if you watch musicals, Mike, that's the way it works a lot of times.
I live musicals.
Yeah, but they did it like an old school classic musical, not one of the new ones. So
no, not even that. See, I got my start in theater, so I did regular straight dramas. I've done the musicals, and usually they're a lot more the roadmap for it is laid out a lot better.
Yeah,
and it's like, oh, okay, let's just. It's been too long since we've done a song. We need to do a song now. And it felt a little rough. Felt a little rushed.
Now, I'm not a big fan of musicals, so I don't know how they go. Was this setup similar to Glee, or do you think Glee's setup was a little bit better?
I think I only caught one or two episodes of Glee. Part partially by mistake. And the one I caught was Rocky Horror Picture Show, their mm-hmm. Rocky Horror Picture Show episode, which I'm a fan of Rocky Horror Picture Show.
There's a lot of people that are not a fan of that if they have seen it.
It's like drinking coffee or tea or alcohol. It's an acquired taste.
Yes.
Rocky Horror Picture Show. It's an acquired taste. Thankfully, you know, and even people from my generation or my age group, Rocky Horror Picture Show could still be a little hard to stomach.
Yeah, you gotta realize that you gotta be able to laugh with it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Rocky Horror Picture Show is a great show if you know how to get if you're familiar with it, or not familiar with it. If you could tolerate that type of musical, of course,
yeah.
They took it right from the play. But with this, I think Glee was a little better structured than what
okay.
they did here.
I think part of that may come from the fact that, if I remember right, the Glee writers and stuff were actually, they had done musicals and stuff in the past. They come from that background. And this was the Flash
right.
writers. They're not musical writers.
No.
Mm.
So, the one thing was, this really, there was only one reason to do this episode. It was to basically fix both Barry and Iris' relationship and Kara and Mon-El. That's
yeah.
the only purpose of this whole episode.
Yeah, which both of them need a fixing, because after the last episode, as I said, it was a downer. It's like all this stuff Barry and Iris have went through. And plus, being a fan of the show, I've been waiting to see them hook up just because they are supposed to be together.
Exactly.
And this happens, and like, well, why? And then you see this episode, it makes sense.
Well, why don't you walk us through this one, Vernon?
So this became a dream sequence also with Barry, too. The same thing that happened to Carr happened in the second episode, the crossover to Barry. He comes there, Music Meister comes there, hypnotizes Barry, he goes into trance, and now Cisco's going to have to put them in the reality together to make sure they're okay, right?
Well, basically,
no,
they're in
the same reality.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
no, Cisco puts in Mon-El and Iris later.
Right, but for now, it's just Barry and Kara that's in there.
Well,
and
all they do is they take Barry, they get ready to put monitors on him, and I'm about to blow the next part, so
I was going to say Cisco helps. I remember that part.
Yeah.
Cisco
well,
vibes them through there.
They both find out, Barry and Kara find out that, wake up in this, what is it, 1930s or 1940s nightclub?
1940s, yeah.
Like a 30s. 30s,
okay.
Yeah, because that mobster thing.
So and the accent that went along with the way Cisco was talking, that was hilarious.
And then we find out, and I was wondering, it's like, I knew that John Barrowman was going to be in here, but I didn't know anything about his part. We find out, basically, they're in a 1930s version, gangster version, of either West Side Story or Romeo and Juliet or any of the exact same thing where it's a star-crossed lovers thing.
I think it was a mixture of a couple different callbacks.
Oh, yeah. Well, they were calling back all kinds of musical references and such.
Yeah. They even referenced, like, the Wizard of Oz in there at one point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, West Side Story is a musical version and readaptation of Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
That's a classic story, Romeo and Juliet, that's been told hundreds of times in hundreds of different ways in different forms and genres and variations. So, but you find out that Barry and Kara are working as entertainment on they're working as entertainment for Malcolm Merlin's nightclub. He's one of the gangsters in town. You find out in the Wizard of Oz reference being the whole you were there and you were there and you were there. Well, Cisco is there as one of the waiters. Wynn is there as a piano player. The piano player
once again a great accent.
We find Mon-El actually. We find out is Merlin's son, the gangster. And here, Iris is the son of the rival gangsters, which are Papa Joe
and
Martin Stein are together. Their daughter is in love with with Merlin's son. And
Controversy there with the two families, children falling in love with each other, and they're not supposed to be dating just because the parents don't like each other.
Exactly.
Now, I don't remember if we skipped over it or not, but at some point during this, shortly after they go in, John Jones shows up with Kara to laugh.
Yes. As soon as Barry, or at the very beginning of the show, yeah, I forgot all about that. It was, a breach opens up out of nowhere. Barry's talking to Iris a little bit. Then they find out, you gotta get over here. A breach opened. Well, in walks Mon-El carrying, Kara and John Jones. Now, John Jones, I think, or Barry had met, but no one else had yet. And no one knows Mon-El at all. But did you guys notice what that looked like when he walked through?
Yeah, because, Martian Manhunter wasn't shown in the, four-night crossover.
No, he wasn't. Well, it looks like we lost. Looks like we lost Mike. He'll probably call back as soon as he can.
Oh.
But, did you notice the, now Flash has done this a couple times. They, when they walk in, hey, wait, you back, Mike?
I'm back.
Okay.
There we go.
Hey, you sound better too. But, when they walked through the portal, Mon-El, Carrie, and Kara, did you guys actually recognize what that looked like?
It looked like, from the comic book where Superman was carrying Kara when she died.
Yeah, it was the classic cover from Crisis. I don't remember which issue it was, but the one Crisis on Infinite Earths when the original Supergirl dies, and the cover is Superman carrying her like she's, like the way Mon-El does in this.
I think whenever they can get it, because then, did that happen earlier in the series?
Yeah, they did that. I believe it was, the episode was A Flash of Two Worlds, and it actually had Barry and, Jay Garrick running down the two sides of a wall, just like the original cover of The Flash of Two Worlds from the 60s.
But didn't they do the, Crisis, Easter egg in a previous show with, Supergirl and Superman? Like about, what was that? Episode like 2 or 3 or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
Well, they did one a couple weeks ago. Remember when Wally disappeared through, into the Speed Force and Barry's holding the costume? That was very similar to the same, to another Crisis cover. Except that one, it was Wally holding, Barry's costume when he was, the first time Barry ever disappeared into the Speed Force and was killed.
Okay. I think that whenever they can do a drawback like that, they'll hit it.
Yeah. Especially the iconic images of DC's past.
Yeah. And, I mean, they even reused that with Batman, Jason Todd, the death of them.
Yeah.
But,
we find them there. And, like I said, everybody's heard of John Jones because Barry's told them about him. And then all of a sudden, once Barry and Kara are in there, they find out that they have to go get Music Meister because Music Meister, by putting them into this dream, was able to use their powers.
Mm-hmm.
So we find out, it's up to Vibe and Kid Flash to go take care of Music Meister. And John's like, well, I can go help you. And they're like, wait a minute. I'm sure you're buff and you're good. And then all of a sudden, he switches and becomes Martian Manhunter. Which, I asked you this earlier, Vernon.
You're green.
Exactly. Well, I asked you this earlier. I think we've actually got more Martian Manhunter actually in the costume on The Flash this week than we have the entire season of Supergirl.
Yeah. As I said, I'm a big fan of Martian Manhunter, but I feel like he's being misused just a little bit on Supergirl.
Yeah. So, this one, he was Manhunter the entire time.
Yeah, I love Cisco's reaction, though. Oh, aliens now.
Well, remember, they've already fought off.
Yeah, aliens now.
And have you also, in each show, they put in different characteristics of the universe, except for Legends. Legends is usually about everything, but for Arrow, it's just regular humans.
Yeah.
Meta-humans for Flash and aliens for Supergirl.
So we got, like I said, this is the most we've seen Martian Manhunter all year, but the rest of the entire episode, he's Martian Manhunter. And the funny thing is, when they do defeat Music Meister and able to put him in a cell, he really didn't do anything wrong other than the fact that he's done this to Kara. If you notice, the entire episode, they're fighting him as a big villain, but if you look, he really didn't do any villain stuff.
And that's what I was saying for the end of Supergirl when he opened up the portal. It's like, wait a minute, he left that. As Mike said, they wanted them to follow them, but you're like, is it because he has a trap for them? But once you get to, sooner in an episode, you're like, wait a minute, he's really not doing too many bad things. He's causing some mischief a little bit, but nothing illegal or nothing to get somebody killed.
Exactly. But back in the dream, you find out that they did find out early that if they die in the dream, they die in the real world. So they basically have to live out the musical and follow the script, which they have to figure out as they go.
And that's what I was saying that early in the episode. You just got to follow Yellow Brick Road? No.
So, as you get towards the end of this, we find out that basically the whole idea is they have to figure out a way for Mon-El, or I don't remember their names in the story, but it's Mon-El and Iris to basically tell their parents that they're in love and live happily ever after. That's the way they're going to solve this musical. But at the they find out, everything's easier in a musical, because they just tell them, you need to tell your parents, and they're like, okay, we'll do that.
Yeah, yeah, I was pretty confused with how well they went along with, you know, Barry just suggesting, oh, yeah, do this. You know what? For you, it was like, I don't know, I was surprised.
Yeah, I just get you, but
there'd be more of a struggle.
This is where it fell into that just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah. They ended up, the whole episode ended up falling back on the whole idea that, oh, everything's easier in a musical. There was a couple of times they did, that they put that in there just so they could move the story rapidly.
It was really convenient, right?
So, but we find out they tell their parents are like, oh, yeah, that's fine, that's good, we're happy for you, as they're both getting ready to go to war.
Yeah, like, we're going to war. We're going to war.
Well, I loved it when Iris's character comes in and goes, Dad's.
Yeah.
And Barry looks, Dad's.
Well, that's
and
the
Sarah's like, wait, what?
That's okay. The first time in the show that you find out that the two of them are actually together, because it looked like Joe was in charge and Victor
Stein was like,
yeah,
his
Stein was
man.
Just his right-hand man, his second. But no, they're actually partners.
Literally.
In more senses than one.
Mm-hmm.
So
we'll just say Stein sleeps on the right.
Yeah. So, but we find out, and they go to war. Kara and Barry get shot, which all of a sudden the real world, everything goes, their vitals go bananas because they were already told if you die in this world, you die in the real world.
And that's when they start seizing, and they start looking at their vitals like, we need to do something. How can we help them?
So,
and then Music Meister gets out of his cell somehow.
Well, no, that's after this next part. Because the next part is when, this is when you were saying earlier.
It was after, yeah.
Yeah, this is where you were saying earlier where Vibe actually is like, you know, or they tell Vibe, can you put us into this? You can go between worlds and stuff. Can you put us into their dream? And he's like, wait, well, we can try. And so he vibes them into the dream.
Hold on to my shoulders.
Yes. And the Vibe has become this season, anytime they need to do something that they can't figure out what they're going to do, Vibe's like, I'll use my powers.
He's being really useful now. I've been waiting for this for the past 2 years.
Yeah. So, you get, they vibe into the dream, and they find Kara and Barry been shot in the streets, and Mon-El runs to Kara, Iris runs to Barry, they find out that they still love each other, and on both cases, and, they end up, saying goodbye and giving a kiss. As soon as they kiss, both of them, all of a sudden, they wake up in the real world.
This felt like something out of Disney to me.
But the funny thing is, I just got done watching Beauty and the Beast 2 hours ago, and it's just, that's the cure to anything in Disney. The Disney magic cure always is true love's kiss.
I don't even really, see, I didn't even know what was fully going on. I just like came in the middle of the show. But when I saw the kiss, I was like, oh, I know this one. True love's kiss fixes
That's
everything.
Right.
We know this. We all know this. Know it. You know it. We know it.
Thanks, Disney.
Unfortunately, true love's kiss isn't going to fix this one. I got to go. I just got home.
Well, thanks for hanging out, Mike.
Well, thanks for letting me come on.
No problem.
Oh, anytime, man.
Hey, wait. Before you take off, why don't you plug your shows and then let everybody know how to get a hold of you?
We Be Geeks. Mighty Marvel Geeks, Wookiee Radio, iTunes on Stitcher, I think they're on TuneIn as well. Best way to contact me, email-wise, mike@webegeeks.net, or you could use Mike at the other sites as well, webegeeks.net, mightymarvelgeeks.net, Twitter at webegeeks, at marvelgeeks, at Wookiee Radio. And, of course, the big announcement that we made on Wednesday. If you're going to Star Wars Celebration here in Orlando, Friday, April 14th, come catch Eric and I from Mighty Marvel Geeks broadcasting from the podcast stage. We are one of 24 podcasts that have been selected from over 100 applicants to appear on stage.
Sweet. That is awesome, man. So thanks for coming on, Mike. Everybody, check those sites out. And I'm kind of partial to Wookiee Radio myself, but...
Next week, we got a great guest coming on.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be a fantastic show. I've been doing a little bit of research on the background of that one.
You guys lucked out on that one. That's real fortunate right there. That's awesome.
Thanks, guys, and I like what you've done with the closet. I'm glad it's gotten a little bigger.
We're not in the closet anymore. They found a spare room for us in the basement.
Yeah. You know, they treat us good. They treat us better. You know, we're not upstairs completely yet, but we're working our way. We're working our way up there.
Then why does the door say utility closet?
You're not supposed to see that. You're not supposed to see that.
I thought we covered
that up.
We cover that up.
No,
are ribbing on each other. It's all in fun.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Everyone. So I mean, we do this all the time. So there's no ill will.
Never.
Ken wouldn't be on Wookiee Radio. So.
We got cross promotion going on there. If you think about how they signed with other companies, but you know what? As being a fan of all this, we got across.
That's right.
Yeah.
So Mike, thanks for coming on, man, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you, guys.
Take care.
Y'all have a good night.
You too.
So we do find out that the True Love's Kiss, they all wake up, and that's at what point all of a sudden Music Meister shows up in the room also. They're like, wait a minute, you were in the cell. How'd you get out of your cell?
He has some special powers that, you know, he kind of scares me now I think about it.
Yeah.
This
you find out that
done anything.
He's not actually from any of the Earths. He's from, no one knows where he's from. He's just like, hey, I did what I wanted to do. This whole thing that he had set up was to show Barry and Iris and Kara and Mon-El that they still loved each other. He says, my work is done. You guys all know you love each other. I'm out of here. He disappears. Kind of similar to another magical character that was on Supergirl a couple weeks ago.
It kind of reminds me of an imp that's even going on in the comic books right now.
Exactly. Now, if I remember right, in the comic books, Music Meister is just a human, isn't he?
Yeah, he's not that powerful. He's nowhere near that powerful.
So it'll be interesting to see what they do with this character if they ever bring him back on any of the shows.
Yeah, I feel like he should be used only for special occasions. I don't know if I want to see him come back yet.
Does it always have to be a musical with him?
No.
Well, Music Meister, it probably would be.
But he can make it one if he chooses.
Yeah.
Special guest. You know what I'm saying?
See, I don't mind a musical episode as long as it's like a one-off thing every like couple of seasons or something.
Right. If they even did this like once a season, I wouldn't mind. But with Music Meister,
Once a season might be a little much.
Yeah, he's so powerful, I like to see him use his powers in different ways. But then again, if he is this powerful, way I got it from this, it felt like something from Dragon Ball Z. It felt like he was his own god, and he was like, you know what? Basically. I'm going to watch. I see you guys doing this. I want to fix it. Now I'm gone because I can.
Well, they wrap up the episode with Kara and Mon-El and everybody going back to Earth 38, isn't it? Or is it 39? 38.
I was 39. One of them.
Either way, but Barry goes over to Iris at the loft and tells her and basically sings her a song asking her to marry him again, and she takes the ring back and all's good at in Central City.
Mm-hmm.
But Mon-El and Kara leaving, Barry asks her, well, are you going to finally forgive Mon-El? And she said, we'll see. So more than likely, yes. By the time we get to Supergirl, they're going to get back together and it'll be a happily ever after thing. Maybe.
Yeah, and now she can also see he has changed. He is not his parents.
Yeah.
And who knows? He from what he said with his parents, they might change for all we know.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've gone a lot longer on these two episodes than I even expected. So,
this is the crossover that usually happens.
Yeah. Well, we need to get moving on to Legends and Arrow so that we can get into this trailer.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be the meat and potatoes of our topic tonight.
So, in Legends, I don't want to go fast through this, but we're going to kind of have to. Arrow, we can blow through pretty quick, but Legends was awesome. Legends was awesome this week, because we got to see World War II, but we got to see what we've heard about coming for a while. We got to see J.R.R. Tolkien from World War I. And this episode had references to Lord of the Rings the entire way, the whole Tolkien universe.
Oh, yeah, it did.
And it's like everything that happened is something he could use later in his stories.
Right, and you could definitely see that being played out. And I was also saying we finally got one of our characters back, too. For real this time.
Oh, yeah. Well, we find out at the very beginning that now that we have the Spear of Destiny all together, but for some reason you still have to be able to turn it on. They find out they actually need the blood of Christ to activate the spear.
Yeah, they went really historical with this one. I didn't think they were going to get this in-depth. I'm like, oh, man, that's really going to have to stop them. How do you find that?
Exactly. Well, they think, we have a time machine. Let's go back to the crucifixion and collect some. But Rip tells them, no, you're not allowed to go there. There's a few points, just like back in Doctor Who, there's a few points that are fixed points in time that you cannot go anywhere near. Or you will totally destroy all of history.
Even Reverse Flash knows that.
Exactly.
Speaking of Reverse Flash, I think he should have been a little bit more on guard. He didn't think that was going to happen. Just to hit this one point real quick, finally Firestorm is using his powers to his full ability. Close enough to it.
Yes, at the beginning we find, I forgot that they had to actually pick up the last couple spots of the spear. They find out that the Legion of Doom is hanging out at the remains of the Vanishing Point. And, so they go to the vanishing point, and they find out really the only one hanging out there is Eobard Thawne. Because that's the only
just
place he
one
can,
member of the Legion of Doom.
Yeah, well, that's the only place he can hide from the time race, because they scrub time looking for him. Well, the vanishing point is outside of time.
And that's why he's a safe spot.
Exactly. But
and if I'm going to say, to be fair, out of all the villains in the Legion of Doom, he would be the most intimidating one I would not want to go against. So
yeah.
They got lucky on getting the spear.
So the Legends showing up, knowing that there's, they figured out no one else is there, and the vanishing point is a ruins anyway after what happened at the end of season one. So they go in, they know they have two places they got to search for the rest of the Spear of Destiny. So they break up into teams like they always do, and you have who was it? You get Ray flies around in micro mode looking for Eobard to keep an eye on him so they know where Eobard's going to be. Then you get Firestorm and Rick searching, and then you get Sarah and Mick. So, of course, Sarah and Mick end up going to the reactor where Captain Cold died.
Yeah,
of course, you can't go there without Mick checking out the place where his buddy died.
Well, I was going to say, with those, they were the ones that had the closest relationship to Captain Cold, him being his best friend, and honestly, there was a little bit of a love connection there with Cold and White Canary.
So, we find out, so they go there, and Sarah finally has to tell, they find that at the same time, about that time is when Firestorm and Rip find the vault where the spear pieces are.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, okay, we got to figure out a way to open this vault. And then Firestorm, we find out, has been working on his transmutation powers. He says, tells Rip, okay, well, what's your favorite food?
Favorite
candy. Rip's like, gumballs, I guess, but he touches the vault and transmutes it into a giant tower of gumballs.
Actually, I think it was jelly beans.
Oh, was it jelly beans? Okay. But
which I thought was really cool, because at first all I could do was water in the first season, right?
He did water once, but I think that was kind of by mistake almost.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I can do this?
Yeah.
We can do this again for the Fortnite crossover, and then we got again this one. He actually perfected it. He asks, what's your reference that you want? Or what's the preference that you want a candy?
Everybody knows the reality of it is Firestorm effects are expensive, so you got to choose when you're going to use them.
Right, and this was a good episode to do so.
Exactly, especially since it's been a while since we've seen him.
Right.
So, but he transmutes it into gumballs, and the couple pieces they were missing of the spear is there.
And now they have all the pieces. Without Eobard Thawne getting to them in time to stop them, he did find out, and boy, was he upset.
Yeah, as soon as they transmute that vault, Eobard gets the warning.
Right. But now they're in the clear at this point until they actually go to the war.
Exactly. So they find out that, like I said, they find out they need the blood of Christ to be able to activate the spear. So let's get that so we can destroy it. But also, that same blood could destroy the spear. It's the only thing that can destroy the spear.
Right.
So they find it. And in order to find it, they figured out that, oh, wait, Nate, when he was studying abroad at Oxford, was reading these unpublished papers from this guy named J.R.R. Tolkien. And you find out that he was a huge Knights of the Round Table buff. And he found out the legends say that Sir Gawain actually had a jar of the blood of Christ that was supposedly buried with him. So they have to find out where was Sir Gawain buried. So that's when they decide they have to go to World War I to France and find J.R.R. Tolkien and see if he ever figured out where Sir Gawain was buried. Well,
and while they're there, thinking Mick is having flashbacks or these delusions again, seeing his best friend's ghost, knowing he's not there. But later on, as the episode goes by, we find out other team members can see him too.
Yeah.
Captain Cold is actually there this time. And he's been putting in information in Mick's head saying, oh, you're like a dog. You bark when they want you to bark. They want you to jump. Yep. I love that part. Wolf, wolf, Mick. He's basically telling them they don't really like you. They're just using you because you're the buff and they can take advantage of you because, you know, no one sees you that smart. So then he gets on the ship and he's still been faithful to the team. He hasn't done anything bad yet. But once he gets there, they start condemning him, saying how, yep, you're always going to be the same. We don't really trust you. We know you're going to take your friend's side over, even though you keep seeing all these images of him. He's not there. And he's like, wait a minute. So you guys really still think I'm a criminal? You don't see me as an equal. And none of them really do. They kind of turn their back on him at this point. I felt like Mick was in the right and they were in the wrong. He was trying, but look at them. All these episodes they've been on, they still don't see him as anything else but a criminal.
Yeah. Well, they actually, what it is I don't think they've never actually thought about it, whether or not they thought he was a criminal or part of the team. He's just always been there, so they're like, okay, well, we'll be able to keep using you.
Yeah, which was bad, because it's like every time Mick gets to a team or finds a friend, all they ever do is want to use him. They never really see him as a best friend. The only one that really saw him as that, if anything, was probably Captain Cold. But during this time that Captain Cold came back, what he's at right now, I still don't think he viewed Mick as such much as a best friend as he did when he was in the Legends team.
Yeah.
This is the Captain Cold from, what, a couple years back, probably when the Flash show first got started up?
Yeah, they went back and pulled Captain Cold out of the timeline before he actually ever left with Legends. So it's sometime back there, right. Probably around season one of Flash.
Mm-hmm.
So you find out that this is still Captain Cold before he's changed at all.
Right, he's still a bad guy, still the hateful villain.
So we now have the full Legion. And the whole rest of the episode, they're trying to find, and they find out, luckily, Sir Gawain is buried on the battlefield they're fighting on.
Man, what a coincidence.
Yes, and the whole episode is basically them getting the blood, but as soon as they do, they actually worked a ceasefire between the Germans and the English on the battlefield so they can get out there and get this, but as soon as they find the blood, all of a sudden, the Legion shows up. Says, oh, gee, yep. Thanks for finding this for us. And they, if I remember, don't they, that's when they destroy the vial?
Yeah, well, the vial got destroyed after this part. This is when they have the spear, and Mick's the one holding it right now. And then this is where he has to make a decision. Who does he want to be with? Does he want to be his old buddy? The thing is, he does not care for the other Legion. He doesn't care for that team at all. But right now, the team that he thought was his friends, after what they had that conversation on the ship, he sees they don't view him as anything but a criminal still. He's not equal. The only person he has to look toward to is Vixen, because he still has a crush on her. And you heard him say, hey, we can fix our past and our future. You can join us, and we can fix your granddaughter's future.
Yeah.
And then she says, no, I'm not going to do that. He's like, well, I got my buddy over here on the Legion. I got Captain Cold. I'll join him. So he takes the spear to the Legion, and this is where they go back on the battlefield, and they start shooting, and that's when the blood gets destroyed.
Exactly. That's what it was. You need to be able to activate the spear, but the blood is the only thing that could destroy it. You don't need the blood to activate it. Right. That's why they had the spear with them, so they could destroy it right there.
Exactly. Now we have power.
So now, and they basically restart the battle while everybody's on the field, so they have no choice but to run away, so that they don't get killed trying to fight against the Legion. So we get to the point now, the end of the episode, you have basically the tally is the Legion of Doom has the Spear of Destiny, can rewrite history, or all of reality, and the Legends are down one member. Because Mick is now batting for the other team.
Yep.
And we see at the very end of the episode that the Legion of Doom knows how to activate the spear, because Merlin actually has a book in Latin, and since he can read Latin, they were able to activate the spear, and that's the end of the episode.
Yep.
And that sets up, I believe, a two-part finale.
And now this is where I was wondering, I said previously before on the show, next season on The Flash, they said that they're not going to use any speedsters for his villain. And we were saying it could be the Rogues coming back. Well, this might now happen since Mick is now off the Legends and we got Captain Cold back and he's alive. So now the Rogues could be set up.
We don't know if Mick is going to be totally off Legends or not.
Not
because
yet.
That's the end of this episode.
There is the option now.
Yes. So that, like I said, that sets up for the finale. And then next up, we actually have Arrow. And this week, not a lot happened in the present time other than Ollie was actually tortured for a lot of the episode. It was Adrian trying to figure out what is his major secret.
Yeah, and I'm even trying to think about it. I've seen 5 years of the show now. What is the secret that he's been holding against all of us?
Which
really wasn't a secret, in my opinion. I thought he said something like that before. At least we assumed it.
Well, he had never said it to Adrian, so.
But
we find
this whole episode was a flashback, really, also Ollie dealing with his demons. When I say his demons, what he's been doing to people in the past is finally getting brought on him. And he actually took that pretty well.
Yeah, but most of the entire episode was basically finishing up the Bratva storyline.
Mm-hmm.
Which was cool to see because we got Dolph Lundgren back.
Exactly, and anytime you get him back, fun.
Oh, yeah.
And we really get to get him back because he's not, I don't think it's going to be the last time we see him.
Possibly, didn't they kill him at the end of this episode?
But I thought they brought him back, too, by the end of the episode.
I don't... Yeah, he wasn't dead yet, which means we may actually see him in...
His eyes opened up.
We may see him in Star City, then.
Yes. Maybe not this season.
That'd be interesting to bring back for the end of the season, possibly.
Yeah, that could set up the next one, so...
But we find in the past...
Gotta check out the IMDb to see if these are going to be back for next season.
See, I haven't been I haven't been checking that stuff because I don't want to be spoiled on what's going on.
Understandable. I feel like we're going to have to get spoiled on some way since we do the DC news, and that's going to be something that blows up.
Yeah. So, which actually there was another tweet that sets up something for later, but in this one we find out Adrian Chase is actually torturing, and we find out that the whole secret that he's been keeping this whole time is the fact that he actually enjoyed killing all the people that he killed.
Yeah, and that's why he's screaming, "I enjoyed it! I liked it, okay?"
And then as soon as he tells Adrian that, he's set free.
Yeah, and by the way, before all that happened, I finally got my answer, where Artemis has been for this whole thing. It's like, she's been missing for like 6-7 episodes. She finally came back in here. Adrian tried to use her as a...
as a leverage.
Yeah, but it works pretty good until he's supposed to break her neck when Ollie doesn't tell him his secret. And after he does say his secret to him, she gets up and is like, "Oh yeah, I was still with him this whole time. Don't worry, I'm fine. Ollie, I hate you still. I'm on his side." So whenever they take them down, Artemis has got to go. I want her gone now. She's a bad girl. I don't like her no more.
But the whole thing brings us to the end of this episode where we find where Ollie goes back up at the base and tells Diggle and Felicity, "I'm done. This is done. I'm shutting it all down."
And when he walked in, he looked broken. He basically, to me, he felt like Batman from after Bane broke his back. But his back was not broken. His spirit was broken, though.
That is basically what this whole episode was. Off.
He got stabbed with some arrows. I mean, he was tortured. At this point, he's like, "You know what? I'm broken. I'm done, guys. I'm shutting this down."
And that was the whole point of this episode, was that Adrian Chase is the first man to ever be able to actually break Ollie.
Mm-hmm.
And that sets us up towards the end of the last area of this, which I have no idea what's going on. There's still a couple of variables out there, like who is actually Vigilante?
Yes.
We know Renee or Ragman is still out in the wind somewhere. And there's a couple things still running around out there. So we don't know what's going on. We found Kovar is still alive, so he could be showing up in the last couple episodes.
And I'm curious to see what Felicity and Diggle and, heck, the rest of the team, are they going to actually shut the arrow set up down? No, the arrow case is going to be going up.
Yeah.
They're going to have to bring Ollie out of this little slump that he's in.
So we've got the last arc coming up for Arrow, and Arrow always brings it together in the end.
Mm-hmm.
We can't waste any more time, man.
We gotta get into this.
We gotta get into this right here. So
this is happening now.
Exactly. Now, just listen up and enjoy.
Yeah. We have to be ready. You, me, the others. There's an attack coming. From far away.
Not coming, Bruce. It's already here. The others. Where are they?
Arthur Curry. The Aquaman. It's on him.
Organic and biomechatronic body parts. He's a cyborg.
You should probably move.
Barry Allen.
Whoever you're looking for, it's not me. You're the Batman?
They said the age of heroes would never come again.
It has to.
What are your superpowers again?
I'm rich.
One thing I can tell you is you got to be free.
My turn.
Come together. Come together.
It's good to see you playing well with others again.
Just like a bat. I dig it.
Maybe temporary.
Yeah!
And what you just heard was the audio from the new Justice League official trailer that Warner Brothers put out today as of recording. Now, this had all kinds of stuff in it. And Vernon, you made a whole bunch of different notes and stuff. But one of the major ones I saw here, which I didn't think we'd have anyway, was there's no mention of Superman at all.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of happy about that. We know what's going to happen. We've seen him in the posters before. He will be back in the movie probably by the end of it, I'm assuming.
Yeah, because we know this is actually going to be two movies, not just one.
Right. I feel like we're going to, that's what I said, by the end of it, we'll probably see him. But since you're on that one, I'm going to, we did get to see Lois Lane. We did not see Supes, but Lois Lane was in there. I don't know what role she's going to be playing. I don't know if she's going to help actually bring Superman back. I don't know if she's just going to be there as a bystander that they help save. We don't really know what her connection is yet, but she is in the film.
Well, we do see some of the other supporting characters from all the other characters also, because we see Dr. Silas Stone, which is Vic's father, and we see him with the mother box in the room, in his apartment, looks like, and
not
parademons.
Just the mother box.
Yes. It looks like the parademons are looking for the mother box, probably.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. I'm like, was it there the whole time just spying on him, or did it actually come from the mother box, since we know what it can do, and that might set up the whole world being taken over by parademons, or at least them taking certain people from Earth and testing them.
Yeah. So, but go ahead. Why don't you go through this on all your notes that you took?
Okay. Also in the trailer, we got to see Batman looking for Aquaman. That's when we got the little snippet of it from the Comic-Con trailer, when he's looking for all the other teammates. Aquaman's there still saving people, saved a fisherman. I didn't know what role he really played in the town, but it seems like he is their guardian, their protector, just how Batman is for Gotham, but on a smaller scale.
Exactly.
But
and
the
actually,
thing that's getting me is...
Well, hang on. Are you still on Aquaman for a minute?
Yeah.
Okay, keep going, because I got something about Momo in a minute.
Okay, the thing I'm trying to figure out now is, now, every time I've seen Aquaman, at least from the cartoons, the animated series, the animated films, the comic books, he started off as being this... regular citizen in a lighthouse, small little town, helping the people out, doing, you know, stuff a fisherman would do. Then he finds out he's a king of Atlantis. After that, we see him go straight back to Atlantis. He never really comes back to be just a normal guy again. And here, it seems like he's doing both, because it seems like he's the king of Atlantis and still helping the people on land in the same way he did before. So are they kind of mixing both stories? What's going on here? This is going to be a new take on him.
I don't know. I think they may actually do like they did with Super Wonder Woman in this, because Wonder Woman, remember, was introduced in Batman v Superman. Then her standalone movies actually goes back to the origin at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. So that could be done. What they do with this is we get Aquaman in here as Aquaman, and because we see Mera in the trailer also, so she's already part of the life and stuff. But then during the Aquaman movie, we go back and see the actual origin of Aquaman.
And from you saying that, we can go into the other stuff I got on here. That brings me to Barry and Cyborg. We get to see a little bit of Cyborg being on the football team with his Leatherman jacket on. He's also actually on the team with his gear on, like he's tackling some people, getting that touchdown.
Basically showing that he was like a star athlete. Showing that he was a star athlete originally.
Was it just me, or did it appear like Cyborg and Flash were fighting within the trailer? Did anybody else see that?
No, I didn't see that.
I thought I saw Cyborg trying to shoot something at Flash, but I don't know. I could have been.
I can go back and watch it while we're talking
together more so. At least that's what I got from there. Because it seemed like they're going to be real buddy buddy in this, and from what they covered in I think a year ago when they had people actually come on set to see how everything was being operated, some of the newscasters and the people for blogs and everything and websites. I know IGN was the one I found out. They say it was like a completely different environment from Batman vs. Superman, and then you got to see that good friendship of Barry Allen and Victor Stone on there. So they seem to be the youngest members of the team, too, so that would make sense that they're going to pair them up.
Yeah.
But that's what I saw. I don't know. I guess maybe we should rewatch that a little bit.
Rewatch it, because I swear I saw Cyborg like firing at Flash for a moment.
Yeah, I'm watching through it now while we're talking.
Oh, no, that wasn't Cyborg.
Who
that
was that?
Parademon.
Because
you got to remember, Cyborg.
All right, good.
Now he can go
that
off
makes
that.
More sense. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, there's parademons all over this thing.
And for whoever doesn't know this, now this is the New 52 Cyborg. This is not the Cyborg we knew from the 80s or the Teen Titans cartoon. Cyborg's body is now made of the Mother Box, like they showed in New 52. When he gets into his accident, the only way his father, and we saw in the Batman vs. Superman movie, the only way he could fix his son, he tried all these different tests. His son's still mantled up, really. His arms missing, legs missing. He's half a body, really. The only thing he can figure out that will actually help his son become whole again is by putting this Mother Box on him from a different world. Yeah. He doesn't really know how it's going to help him, but you know his son can be fixed, at least to a certain extent.
Well,
so now his... That's why when you saw a trailer, he probably looked like a cyborg because it's the same, mm-hmm. really the same tech.
Yeah,
the same world.
It was the tech that, especially because it was just like a few
clips
few
that were just going on.
Yeah, a few clips in the cut and then it was away. So, like, that's why I thought it was cyborg. That makes sense.
Yeah, well, some of the major differences between Cyborg and the New 52 Cyborg was the fact that the New 52 one, he can still do all the talking to computers and all that stuff, but mm-hmm. he can actually open boom tubes now.
Yeah.
So he can boom tube people back and forth. And I didn't realize that the trailer here shows it, and you said the New 52 he could also, is he can actually fly now.
Yeah, they gave him, like I said, they made him really OP. Like I said, he was on Teen Titans team. He doesn't need to be too powerful really
yeah.
with them. There was no need. But you're dealing with people like Superman, Batman, Aquaman,
oh,
Wonder Woman.
League now, boy.
Yeah, they got to update him a little bit to make him on the same, go on par with them. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
And by the way, for me, this might make me like Cyborg on the Justice League more, because as a fan, I still really see it weird with him being on Justice League, but this movie, I might not mind it now.
Yeah.
It might give me more to the Justice League comic books. But the other things that I also saw in here, I wanted to ask you guys this. What do you guys think of Flash's speed compared to how it looks in the TV show or all together? Because he's never really had blue lightning. I remember him with the yellow
yeah.
lightning. This looks a little different, but it seems to fit for this movie.
Yeah, his super speed and the Speed Force stuff looks, to me personally, a lot better than actually the suit. The suit, for me, I still don't like the armor look.
Mm-hmm.
I feel you on that.
I really think they're going to fix that by the next movie. I mean, look at Batman. He's got like 3 new suits in this movie compared to what he did last time. And with him going into Barry's apartment talking to him, I'm pretty sure he's going to help them out.
Well, that makes sense that he has 3 new suits. Because remember, he did say his one superpower is he's rich.
Oh, yeah. To get into that, too. Batman made me laugh more than anyone in this trailer, which you would never think someone should ever say.
Yeah.
But it's nothing wrong with that, because as we were saying before, Ken, on the when we first started this whole rebirth thing, Batman's going back to what we saw in the Batman animated series. Yes, Batman's dark. Yes, he's gruesome. Yes, he can be very brutal. Mm-hmm. He can be a hard butt at some times, but also he can make you laugh. He
Batman's
has humor.
Hilarious.
Yeah,
in my opinion, Batman's flat out hilarious. And I didn't even get to answer your question about Flash. I actually like the whole blue lightning thing that they have going on and the effects. So for the Flash, I think the effects that they have going on for him are going to be they look great to me so far.
And I also like how it seems like literally when Flash is speeding up, time slows down for him.
That was a cool moment.
Yeah,
Batman
just threw the batarang at him.
Well, we saw.
Look at this real quick. That was pretty cool. And Batman, and back to the Batman part. That was part of the reason why I ended up loving Batman was because his timing.
Yeah.
His timing and what he says is hilarious. He's not going to, you know, like open up a few jokes on you.
Right.
That's not his style. But like sometimes what Batman says, like in the moment, it's just
And that was the thing about
so
Batman.
Quotable. He's so quotable.
Like with Flash. Sorry. And were you about to say something too?
No. Go ahead.
With like Flash, you know, Flash always been like he's the jokes for the team at times.
Uh-huh.
Then you also have Hal Jordan that makes his little one-liners. Mm-hmm. Batman, with his humor, he doesn't say a lot. He's usually gruesome and he's usually deep
it's
and
dry.
Mean. Yeah, but when he says his little one-liners, you're like, uh-huh. Oh, Batman. Oh,
yeah.
Wow, you're right. That was funny.
That's usually, when you get that type of stuff, that's the sign of a person who actually understands Batman.
Right. Yeah.
When you have
that's the thing.
When you have just grim and gruesome and dark, that's someone who's like, well, I've heard of this about Batman, to me, personally.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And that's what I was, like I said, that's what we were raised on. And you watch the show, he's watched the show, I've watched the show. Mm-hmm. Batman would even give that little smirk in the shows. And that.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why I was saying, to me, I really feel like Ben Affleck is the best Batman on screen, since, at least for our era, because Adam West, he was a different Batman. But from when they started doing the whole dark thing, Michael Keaton, he wasn't really too funny. He was just, he was Batman. Christian Bale,
he had
Batman.
Well, Well, Michael Keaton had a couple of little one-liners they tossed in there. Not a lot, but a couple little things.
Yeah, but it still felt like he pulled off more of that actual, like, humor for him to work was when he was actually Bruce Wayne. When he was Batman, I felt more of the real serious dark tone.
Mm-hmm.
Same for Christian Bale. Even when he did the whole scene in The Dark Knight, I'm not wearing hockey pads. It was funny, but it was like, that didn't feel like Batman. Ben Affleck, this feels like what I grew up on. This feels like Batman.
Yeah.
But also, since we're talking about he has all these new suits, I also noticed his, I don't know what this is. It's some type of new vehicle he has. I know it's not the Batmobile, but this thing can crawl on walls.
I think this is what they're talking about as the Flying Fox.
Was that the... I think the Flying Fox is bigger. The Flying Fox was a ship they were on. This looked a little small.
That was my turn.
Oh, okay.
This one it looked like two. I don't know. But
oh, wait, yeah.
Like
they said the Flying Fox was more like their version of like a helicarrier.
Right, yeah. Right. And this thing looked like a different version of the Batmobile, but just...
Yeah, so it was like a wall crawler or something.
He is rich.
I mean, he is rich.
He so, is.
You know.
But the next thing I want to shoot on was Wonder Woman. She didn't have as many parts in here as I thought she would, but it also makes sense because they just released her trailer earlier this month.
Yeah.
So they don't want to focus too much on Wonder Woman in the same thing. So we got her a little bit in the background.
Okay, that makes sense. Because I was just thinking, all we did was see her take down some henchmen.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really wanted to see her do work. But, you know, it's just a trailer. You know, so I guess in a way it did its job because it made me like, now I'm like, nah, I really want to
see this movie. I want to see what's
all going to happen now. So.
Well, you also got to remember, we only got about 2 months till we get to see Wonder Woman do everything she can do.
True. Man, that's
because we got her movie coming up, so that they needed to sell the other characters.
There was one thing that she did in the trailer. I said, you know what? She didn't need to do anything else. I did not know Wonder Woman could do this in the books. I don't think she can. If I'm wrong, tell me. I never knew she could use her bracelet and her shield as a weapon to make some type of destructive force when she clings them together. It seems like before she hit, you saw this electricity going in from like out of the sky from Zeus himself.
I think it clings. Well, she does that in the Wonder Woman trailer also, and I think that's them playing up the demigod side of her, that she actually has some powers from Zeus.
That makes sense. That makes sense to me.
I mean, if you're going to be born from his creation, really, something.
Yeah, I like that, then, if that is the case.
See, for me, that still feels weird because I grew up in the time before she was a demigod. When I was growing up, Wonder Woman was created from clay and had life breathed into her, but she wasn't actually a daughter of Zeus.
Yeah. I think they did that for New 52, and the reason why they also did that was her sister, Cassie.
Okay.
She is Zeus's daughter. Now, that's when I first heard about that in the Teen Titans before they did New 52. She was actually born from Zeus, and since they're like, oh, well, we can't use Donna too much in New 52,
they're
sisters, they need the same father.
I have a question about that. You said, no one's really used Donna much until now in the new Titans book now. But there was a time when obviously Donna was off the table for anybody, for cartoons, for movies, for everything. There was no Donna Troy, period.
Right.
What happened? I've never heard a story about that. So listeners out there, super friends, if anybody knows why Donna Troy was missing for so long from the DC universe, let us know. That's the biggest question because remember Teen Titans, when they did the Teen Titans series in the late 90s, they were told they could use everybody but Donna Troy. Young Justice, they used Cassie or Cassandra because they were not allowed to use Donna Troy. Why?
Right. And that was also a problem. Do you remember we were at work and we were looking up the the writer said they didn't know how to use her for one. Because her origin story was all messed up because when they were doing Wonder Woman's, you know how many times they'll redo origin stories for these comic book characters. Well, since Wonder Woman is the reason why Donna came about, really, when they redid hers and they kept redoing it and they made the story that they were going to stick to, they're like, oh, wait a minute. Donna doesn't fit this story at all, but we already went with Wonder Woman, so how are we going to put her back in? We don't need her right now. That's all I know about that. I don't know if there's any other reason, but I think that was because they didn't know how to put her back in there. But since they did the rebirth, it's rebirth. You can put anyone back in here now.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, if you guys out there listening, and if you know, let us know, give us an idea of maybe why this was happening. And because of this, do you think we might get to see any of their sidekicks actually in the movie? This wasn't on my notes. This is just something I'm wondering now.
Not in this one. but maybe in their other movies. Aquaman, I don't think we're gonna see Aqualad at all. You might see in the Batman movie, you might get reference to Robin.
We already got the reference for Robin from the Dark Dawn Justice.
You might get a little bit more information or get a new Robin, possibly.
Hopefully.
But the other ones, really, they didn't have... Because Wonder Woman never actually had a sidekick. Wonder Girl was never her sidekick.
She didn't. No, it was always, like I said, she had a little sister. And that was the part that really was.
And then you look at... Flash has Kid Flash, but in this one, Flash is a Kid Flash. He's only like 20 or 21, it looks like.
Yeah, he seems like he is Wally. So I don't think they're going to add it. This is literally like the Barry Allen from the TV show. If they were going to put in another Kid Flash, they'd have to wait a while, and he really wouldn't be a kid. He would just be like, oh, you have a Speed Force powers too. I'm just more experienced than you
is
are.
Is Barry much young to y'all?
Oh, that's what I'm saying. He's young in here. He's like 21, 22. Him and Cyborg should be the youngest ones.
A little weird, but like, you know, I'm not making an issue of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't expect it.
I don't mind it. It fits for what they're doing. It seems like Bruce Wayne and Barry are going to be not, I'm putting it out there just because it seems like it's this comic book war. We draw from each other. I feel like they're doing what they're doing in the Marvel universe with making Spider-Man Tony Stark.
Yeah,
relationship. It's like, here's a young guy that's very powerful, but he doesn't have that focus. They're very smart. They're very intelligent. They both are the only two detectives on the team.
Yeah,
same how it's in the Avengers. If you really look at it, besides who was that? Bruce Banner being the scientist. The only other smartest guy on the Avengers right now is Peter Parker and Tony Stark. So I feel like in here, since they're both detectives, and he works at the police headquarters. Batman's Batman. He can help Flash with things, and that's why I'm saying he'll probably get him a new suit.
That may be where the actual Flash suit comes from.
It could be, yeah.
And, so what else you got on your list?
The other thing I was looking at, well, we got to Silas Stone, we got to Lois Lane. The other thing I noticed in here was Barry's origin story. We seem like we're going to dip into that a little bit.
Yeah, because we get to see Henry Allen in jail.
Right, now tell me that didn't look just like what they put on the show.
Yeah.
So,
which is cool, the same story, but and I liked it. I did. I'm not talking about. I thought it was really good, but now
that's currently an integral part of the Barry Allen origin story. It wasn't originally, but it has been since the rebirth, and since actually he was brought back in the mid 2000s, I believe. Because if I remember
right, and that was the other thing too. They kind of took also from Batman.
Yeah.
And that made them even closer too. They both lost their parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Barry, yes, he still has his dad. He's alive, but he's not with him.
In all honesty, when it comes to the Flash, in that sense, I do miss some of it. I actually do miss the
lighter-hearted.
Yeah, because it's not that I have a problem with Dark. Mm-hmm. You know me.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with Dark. Yeah, I love Batman, but Flash having a more tragic story now.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Flash more so when he didn't, because Flash was genuinely good guy doing good things.
He
didn't need no tragedy.
Right.
He's just a good guy doing good things. Now, I'm not about, I'm not complaining about it. I understand we all, I understand how this all changes. We know how it goes. But yeah, that's one thing I did like about the,
original.
Classic
Flash.
Yeah, he was just a good guy doing good things. But now we have him, so he's more tragic. And, I ain't gonna lie, though, it plucks on the heartstrings a little bit.
It did.
That does,
unfortunate. And Ken was mentioning that too. He was saying the same thing, how the redo of him kind of took away from some of Flash's characteristics. It gave him other ones, but it took away from what the original Flash was, the original Barry Allen.
Agreed.
But for me, that made me a little bit more connected. I was really raised by my mom as a kid, so when I actually reread the Flashpoint, I connected to Barry more, and this is what really made me say, out of all the Flashes, Barry's my favorite. Yes, I loved Wally in the 90s. That's my era, but when I read that book, I was like, oh, yeah, Barry's got me now. But the other thing I was going to say about with Barry, if this is happening in the movie universe like it was the television universe, his dad's in jail, his mom's probably dead because that's the new origin. Well, does that mean we're going to see Reverse Flash in the new movie universe? Because that was the whole reason why his dad got in jail.
What's the chances that the actual Flash movie, once they finally get it up and running, is going to be a Flashpoint movie?
I would not put it past them, Ken. That might be the only way they can really go.
Already?
Yeah.
God dang, we can't wait to like this.
Well, the one thing they can do is the fact that since Flash, Arrow, and the Flareverse is actually on TV, people know the character of the Flash. They know his origin story. They know how he became the Flash. They could hit the ground running, per se, with the Flash story and do something a little bit more advanced and not have to do a background on him.
And that's what it seems like they're doing with this Justice League movie. Now, that is one big difference they're doing from our counterpart, Marvel. They built up these origin stories by each movie and brought it to you like this. The thing about with Marvel and the DC, Marvel hasn't been TV heavy as what DC's been doing.
That is very true.
And plus, these characters have been along with us since we were young. I'm going to go back into years ago when I was talking to my buddy on the phone a long time ago. We were superhero fans. I was more of a comic book fan than he was, so he was asking me these questions. He said he always knew it was Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman. He got that. He said those were the trinity because those were the characters that he really focused on. And with Marvel, he always felt it was Spider-Man, Wolverine, and Hulk. And I was like, no, there are not. He said, no. Well, why is it now they're finally focusing on their trinity, really? DC's Marvel, been doing this for years.
Marvel's never really had a trinity, per se. Where these are the top three guys.
Right, they're trying to do that now, but, I mean, back in the day, those were the ones that ran the Avengers then. They're now just showing it in the media. With DC, they always wanted to let you know, hey, we got Batman, we got Superman, we got Wonder Woman. Well, now we're going to show you Flash. We had that Flash. Then we had the Superman's cartoon. We got to see all these characters. Then we had the Justice League cartoon. We got to see all these characters. Then we had the TV shows with Smallville. We got to see the characters Aquaman, Flash.
Oh, yeah.
We got a little glimpse of Wonder Woman even on there. We got Cyborg.
You got Zatanna on Smallville.
We got Lois Lane in a Wonder Woman costume, though. I'm still counting that. That was the closest we could get.
Is there a certain character in the trailer that you two, that really...
stood out?
Yeah, to you. Who stood out to y'all as far as, like, characters?
For me,
in the trailer.
This was in my notes, too. I was just waiting to build him up.
Okay.
You're going to have to edit this one out.
What was the one for you? But,
do you want to go first? Because, like I said, you might want to edit mine now. I'll let you go first.
Well, if we got the same one, then that's fine. I actually had two moments. One was that got me excited was we've seen the pictures of Aquaman for a while, but in the trailer, Aquaman in the orange and green Aquaman costume. I mean, it's almost like scale armor is the way it looks, but it's still orange and green with the A for the belt.
Yeah.
The other one was, this was probably the one you pulled up too, was J.K. Simmons looks like Gordon.
He did. The mustache was it was perfect. It was spot on.
I didn't see J.K. Simmons. Like, for him, he was the perfect J. Jonah Jameson. I mean, there was...
Right.
You look at the pictures in the comic books all the way back to the beginning of J. Jonah Jameson, and you look at J.K. Simmons, just his acting picture, not as Jameson, and you said, that dude looks just like J. Jonah Jameson, and they used him for that character.
Right.
And this one, I didn't see Gordon when I first heard about this. But you look at it in the trailer, it's like you see it, you don't see Simmons, you see Gordon.
And that's what I call an acting chameleon right there.
Yeah.
You can play your part so well, you become the actual character. You're not your actor. So, for example, Samuel Jackson. When Samuel Jackson plays a character, he's Samuel Jackson playing that character.
Yeah.
Which is good. He's a good actor, but you still see Sam. Mm-hmm. With J.K., it's like, wait, whoa, Gordon, hey, Jameson, there you are. He takes over that so well. He becomes the actual character from the book.
Well, this doesn't say that the other actors that have done Gordon didn't do well. Like, I thought Gary Oldman did a fantastic young Gordon.
Right.
And, now, going back to the old, the Gordons back in the day with the movies from the 80s and 90s and then back to farther, that was a totally different thing. They really didn't have a set thing for what Gordon would look like, I guess, or they didn't try to get it as close. But the two best I've seen were Oldman and J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, that's
so far.
Because I didn't really, the Gordon I saw in the Michael Keaton or even the other two movies they did after that, that was not Gordon. I'm like, this is just a regular police officer. I don't see any Gordon resemblance whatsoever. I thought that was the only part of the Michael Keaton films I did not like was the Gordon, which should not be.
So, Vernon, who was your one standout character?
I had two. I'm going to go on the first one that I liked him, but not as much as I did the second one. The one that really stood out to me was still Barry Allen. As I said, I don't know if it's because he's younger, his past, and seeing his dad really what got me very interested, because Flash is still one of my favorite DC characters. And I already talked in how I praise Batman and Wonder Woman, but I've seen them already on the screen. I haven't seen Flash they're making yet. So Flash stood out to me, but the other character that really did for me, oh my God, I love this character. He looked like such a badass in here. There's no way fans are going to have to hate on him. I don't want to hear any more fish jokes. I don't want to hear anything else about, all he has is to talk to fish and only use water. No. Jason Momoa is going to be the best Aquaman I've ever seen, period.
I loved him in Stargate.
Love him in almost anything. Conan, I was like, and. But
well, that's Conan.
But besides Jason Momoa is a great actor. Right.
Well, that also, if you get a chance, he just did a series for Netflix called Frontier. It's only six episodes. It is fantastic. Yep. We just finished it today.
I've seen that one. I'm a Momoa fan, and my mom, for other reasons too, she's a Momoa fan.
I have a link to Momoa, kinda. I actually buy my bandanas from the same guy he buys all of his bandanas from.
Really?
Yeah, wow. Nigel Sade, which I think you've seen Nigel's artwork at Oddball.
I guess you wear them enough to know the artwork.
Yeah, well, I know Jason Momoa buys anytime when they go to Comic-Con every year, because Nigel goes out and sets up at Comic-Con, and Momoa buys anything that he doesn't have yet.
Wow.
Wow. So I wear the same bandanas as he does.
Man. Okay, so Momoa was a win for both of us. Ty, who stood out for you?
You think I'd be more prepared for my own question?
I know.
Cyborg.
Okay.
Cyborg, actually, because since, you know, I've only read a little bit of New 52, but seeing how, I'm used to Teen Titans Cyborg. There's no denying it. So seeing him now.
On the big screen.
On the big screen and everything, and seeing his powers and just seeing how he looks really, really cool. Like, I'm really looking forward to seeing Cyborg do some great things within the movie. Yeah. So,
and
he stood out in Aquaman too. Like I said, I loved him since Stargate. Like, oh my
god. Oh yeah.
And that was the thing I was going to hit on too here. All three of their costumes to me look better than what I've seen previously from the snippet trailer, the little quick one we had from Comic-Con. Yeah. Flash's costume didn't look as good in there as it did now. They've had time to edit a little bit. Momoa's costume looks great. They're showing, like you said, the scales. And as you said, it's the orange and green. If you really look at it in the right lighting, he still has the same colors. They put more definition on that. And also, Cyborg looks, he's so cleaned up. Yeah. I mean, the first trailer was like he looked too bulky. It looked like his metal was taking over his actual body. And here, it looks smooth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it did look like that also in the trailer, to me, the armor looked more bulky. In the comic books, when he first got the armor on him, it was a really bad, dingy, bulky look to him. Over time, as it kept going on, the suit seemed to blend in more with his body. So that might have been why, too. And if that's the case, I'm fine with it. But in this trailer, it looks so cleaned up.
Did you guys notice towards the beginning of the trailer when they show Cyborg, they actually show like his armor forming around his face to make it like a like a helmet? If you notice, does it mean or did it look like Deadshot?
Yeah, I was when I was just saying how cool his armor looked, I was literally thinking of that moment.
He's got the one red eye.
I should have said it, but it made me think of Deadshot as well. With just got the red eye and everything.
That's it.
That's
the only eye being shown.
It looked so cool. Oh my goodness!
And I thought it was really cool that it was just that eye being shown, because that was his cyborg part taking over. That was when it was like, okay, he's going up in the sky and he is playing full on Superman at this point.
Not playing around.
But this is his armor protecting him too. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to show his human face to get injured. And that's the thing about Cyborg that I don't think they put that in the original one as much. His brain is literally conflicted because his brain is a human brain with this apocalyptic technology.
Mm-hmm.
He is the smartest computer on this planet. But he's also human.
Well, so I think also looking at this and knowing that they're basing Cyborg totally off Mother Box, I'm thinking this is going to basically be a Cyborg movie just about. Because what's going to happen here, possibly, is the whole reason that the Parademons and, Steppenwolf are coming to Earth is to find that Mother Box that turned Cyborg into Cyborg.
Yeah.
I can see that now.
And the fact that you're saying that, once again, I'm not trying to rip too much or have them rip, sound like they're ripping off of them. I feel like it's going to be the same thing for Vision in, Infinity War, whatever they're going to call
possibly,
it.
Quite possibly, yeah. Thanos comes to Earth looking for the stone the Vision has.
Right, and it's like, well, Cyborg's a Mother Box. He's going to probably, and as they played up in the comic books and the New 52 comic books and the Justice League War film, he's going to be the way they send all these Parademons back to Apocalypse along with Darkseid.
Yeah, probably.
And here probably Steppenwolf, or I don't know exactly how they're going to set this up, but anything from Apocalypse, Cyborg's going to have to be the key for it.
So we've gone pretty good on this trailer. Is there any one last thing from each of you guys, something from the trailer we haven't caught on? Let's go with Ty first.
Okay.
Nah, you don't go with me.
Well, think about it, and we'll get to Vernon.
Yeah. There was two more things. One real quick one I think everybody got from this. Didn't Batman and Wonder Woman feel like the mom and dad of this movie?
In the Quite possibly.
Yeah.
I was like, we gotta get the team together. We're doing what Superman wanted, and hopefully when Superman come back, we'll be a full family. But the main thing I really wanted to hit on that we haven't touched yet, there was a scene in the film where it looked like something from Lord of the Rings. It was like this mid-earth war going on with the parademons, and it looked like the Amazons.
Okay.
This is my theory. I think this takes place back when they first came to Earth, because in the other trailer they said this mailboxes have been here for centuries. They've been here for a long time. So I think this might have been the first war they had with the parademons, and maybe they were somehow to send them back to Apocalypse. The Amazons split up like in Lord of the Rings. They gave the rings to the humans. It looked like the humans, the Amazons, the Atlanteans. It seems like that's what they're doing with this film right here. So they probably sent that away for years, defeated them, and that's when we get this time. They're coming back finally. But that was just a little theory I had on it from seeing that. What did you think, Ken, from seeing that? It looked like a little medieval war going on there.
I don't remember exactly what part you're talking about, but I just took it as just more battle footage of how much the parademons are going to be on Earth. Now, that could have also been, remember in Batman v Superman, they did a dream sequence with Batman of the future. That may be something similar to that. It may be a dream sequence of some sort.
And last thing right here, I'm going to let Ty talk and we can get on to the other news here. Now, as I said, I've seen an article. I don't know how real this was. It was supposed to have been a leaked script of the Justice League. They said after all this happens, everything's going to be fine. But we get a little clip of Martian Manhunter coming back into Superman and Lois's apartment. He's sitting there telling them, hey, this happened. The thing is, I didn't think that from the way he's showing Dawn Justice, when Flash came to Batman in that vision, that made sense because of Speed Force. But him actually having those visions of seeing what the Doomsday parademons will do to Earth, I had no idea Flash could do any of that. That seemed more like a Martian Manhunter power.
Quite possibly.
By a vision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, now he may not be in this movie. They might just go with that Flash's thing, and I'm like, okay, that's new to me. But it would make more sense if they did put him in here somewhere. I know he's not really a big member of the team now in the books, but to show him just to do that and him going back to doing whatever it is he is on Earth, that's fine. But that just seemed too much like a alien-type move to do with the Martian Manhunters. Too much mental status going on there for Barry. But that was it for everything I really got from all the stuff in the trailer.
Okay, Ty, what else? Is there anything we didn't hit on that you saw?
We touched on it a little bit, but I'd like to touch on it a little bit more. For as far as Aquaman, I really liked what I'm starting to see from Aquaman, because he seems like he's becoming from what I could tell from the trailer, he seemed very brutal. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
He's a god. Don't get me wrong. But he's going to – he is a god. You know what I mean? He is a god.
Now, and also in the trailer with Aquaman, since you touched on that, does this seem more like the Aquaman we got from the Justice League Unlimited series? The more of like, I'm a king. I'm Aquaman. I'm not just Aquaman here to help just you guys.
Yeah,
I am a king of Atlantis, and I really felt that. Maybe it was the beard. That made me say that. But I just felt that king's status coming from Aquaman. I just don't feel like he's a superhero. He's over the rest of them. This is what Superman probably would feel more like if he was a darker tone character. But the thing about Aquaman, he doesn't have to be too much darker tone. He just, as I said, being a badass.
Well, actually, that fits right in with my last thing that I noticed in the trailer that we've not talked about was one of the last scenes you see with Aquaman. You actually see him riding on the Batmobile, standing on top of it, launches off of it, uses the Batmobile to catapult himself up into a trio of parademons and blast right through them. So, yeah, Aquaman's going to be a lot stronger than what people expect him to be, I think.
Which they need to show, because out of all these characters, he's the one that's always been the joke of the butt of everyone's jokes.
Like, I remember I used to get on VL's nerves back in the day. I used to like make fun of Aquaman on some silly stuff. But then between Injustice and how they're treating Aquaman,
and then what they did with the Jim Lee comic books of the New 52,
and then with this movie coming out, VL hasn't heard me say a joke about Aquaman in years. Now I'm making fun of Aquaman. You pick him in Injustice, man. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I really like how serious we're having to take Aquaman now, and this movie it's going to be. I have high hopes for it now. I have very high hopes, especially for Aquaman. for Cyborg, really, especially two. Those two in particular I have high hopes for in this movie.
Well, awesome. Well, I guess that means that we enjoyed the trailer. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. This has been one of the best trailers I've seen this whole year from any movie, not even comic book wise, just any movie.
I didn't know the trailer was even coming out, and then VL told me, oh, yeah, you got to come see the trailer and everything like that. So watching it, I went from no hype for the movie to now I'm all hype. So it did its job very effectively.
And I'm glad Zack Snyder waited. Everybody was asking for the Super Bowl. Where's his trailer? Where's the Justice League trailer?
Mm-hmm.
He took his time. He waited.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you guys didn't know, this is around the same time the Batman vs. Superman movie came out last year.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I dropped it this time.
I heard, speaking of that movie, have either of you seen the rated R version of that movie?
Oh, we
have
it.
So oh, okay, never mind.
So many times.
Mind.
That's been a big reference point of the show.
It is so much better than the original.
Yeah, it was long. I'll say that. I see why I need to cut some things, but they did not need to cut as many. Like, so we discussed this on
watch it.
Yeah, watch it. I'll show you some episodes when we actually did our review of that, so we can keep going here. But yeah, it was a lot better.
Well, you have
that movie, the actual movie. The only thing I could complain about it was lack of humor. Besides that, it made perfect sense.
Well, you have the movie, don't you? The extended cut?
Yep.
So you have to sit him down and show him.
Yeah, ready for 3 hours.
Moving past this, we love this. We can't wait to see it coming out in November. But I think we need to move over to some reviews here. We have our comic book reviews. Now, out of what I read and pulled out, I had 8 or 9 of the books from this week, and not a lot of them had major DC universe-shattering type things, except we did get Superman number 19 had the Superman Reborn storyline, Part 3, and we got Batwoman number 1. Now, we had the Rebirth, Batwoman Rebirth number 1 already. Mm-hmm. This is the first one getting into our actual story. So, we want to start with that one?
Yeah, let's go with Batwoman first, and then we can tell Superman, since that is really a big concept going on with Rebirth right now.
Okay.
But from here, we get her still searching for stuff that Batman wanted from the Monster Men.
Exactly.
She's been tracking this guy down for about six weeks now.
Something like that.
And he still has some venom, or not venom, he still has some substance of the
Monster
Men.
It is Monster Venom. It's Monster Venom from the Monsters.
And so it is actually called Venom. Yeah. Monster Venom. I didn't want to sound too much like Bane here. But,
it's not
Venom.
It is Monster Venom.
I'm sorry.
It's not the Venom, it's just Monster Venom.
Okay. And this one, Batwoman comes in just like Batman. As she said, he's put faith in her to find all these vials that this guy's had. She finds them, and she starts taking them out. This is where she still doesn't get it from his hand. She throws him, and he still injects himself. And now you got this big old hawking beast in this little store. Well, it's not really a store. This is a place where people come all around the world, and they shop there. And let me see how many people are actually there. 100 million visitors per year.
Yeah.
So this is a place where he planned on messing up some people and killing them. She stops him. Now you get this woman. I did not know this, Ken. This is Alfred Pennyworth's daughter.
Is it his daughter or his niece?
This is his daughter. I had her pulled up here. Let me go back if I can find it.
It's Julia Pennyworth.
Yes. Julia Pennyworth. She is actually the daughter of Gordon and... How do you pronounce that?
I'll look it up at the same time, too. I'm checking the DC Wiki.
Marie. Marie's daughter.
Okay.
But now they haven't really confirmed this. She's alleged daughter of them. There's no blood samples where it tested. But anyways, to get back in the story, she is basically still the Alfred to Batwoman, which makes sense since this is actually his daughter. And, she's saying how it's been 6 weeks, and her being a Pennyworth, of course she's going to have that little smart remarks every time, because right now Batwoman's getting tired of hearing it. She's not actually there to help. She's just there to make these one-liners and get on her case about her fighting. But of course, with her being Batwoman, she does take down the monster, and he goes back into being a human. And then this is where she's interrogating him. For 6 weeks, she's been waiting to interrogate him to find out this is the actual last substance that he has. Right when she's interrogating him, Knife comes in, and her name is actually Knife, comes in with a knife and throws it into his eyeball and kills him. So 6 weeks of sleepless nights gone for nothing, because she didn't get not one thing from him. So now she goes back on her yacht, and of course with her, you know, all this money that Batman's been helping her, I think a little bit that she's had from her family.
A little bit. She's also like a Wayne, so her family is loaded as much as his is.
And right now, this is the Batcave 2.0 on a yacht. I mean, this is crazy. I mean, the Batcomputer is in the symbol of a bat right now. It's insane. And she's even telling her about all these 6 weeks she's been working, sleepless nights, and it gets shot to pot. But this is when she gets the knife from the assassin that threw it in his head. Pennyworth is telling her she's been scanning it ever since it happened, getting the blood samples off of there. And now she sees this on the back computer. By the way, guys, I'm going to try to put a picture out there on Instagram. You got to see this back computer. This thing is awesome. Batman doesn't, to me, have a computer that looks this cool. His is bigger, but this is the symbol of a bat. You can't get any cooler than that. But she's putting in a blood sample, and she's seeing how this is a little island that Pennyworth has never heard of, except for Batwoman. She's heard of this island. This is called Kuriana, and it seems like this to be like her safe haven. This is where she wants to go to make peace, it seems like. She's even saying she don't wonder if Batman's ever been to a place to make him feel that way. And this is when Pennyworth walks in on her and gives her a drink and starts talking to her, and they start opening up about all this stuff that's been going on. She's not as broody as Batman. She's different, but the way she's acting now, she's beginning to turn into Batman like that. And then this is where she tells him, Are you working with me, or are you one of Batman's spies? And she just drinks her vodka. Pennyworth doesn't say anything, so Batman could be having her delay messages back to him to make sure she's doing a good job for the Bat family.
Yeah.
But she keeps asking her now, Kate, what is this Kuriana that you're talking about? Then we have a little backstory to the lost years. It looked like she went to some type of cave that had a mini little pond or lake in it.
Well, it was an underwater cave. She was diving.
So underwater cave. She hits her head on it.
Yeah.
And somebody saves her. And they do not say who it is that actually got her out of the water. Female helps her out. And now this is where it seems like she hit her head. And in the past book we saw in Rebirth, she had half of her hair cut off on the side of her head. Now we see why. She actually was injured. That's why there was a part of her hair missing on that side. It had a gash in it. And then this is when a guy named Raphael comes in and helps her out and takes care of her. We still don't see the woman yet, but he's at her bedside helping her drink, helping her eat, getting her back to where she needs to be. Puts the covers on her, then walks out the room. Later on that night, she gets up, as any Bat family member would do. They never have a good night's sleep. She starts walking into the hallway, opens up the door of her room, and hears them having this really deep conversation. And she doesn't know what's going on, but sounds very heated and serious. Now, Ken, is this the same girl knife that threw the knife at her in the beginning that she's looks staring like at it. And then she closed the door?
It looks like it.
And I looked on Comicbind to make sure all the characters are in there. There's only three characters that's really being featured right now. That is Julia, Knife, and Batwoman. So I think this is Knife. So she's had encounters with her before. And then that's when we go back to her present day. And all it says is, Safaria, I'm sorry. I did all this damage. And for the damage that I'm going to do. So she's in her bat costume, and she plans on taking some people down and kicking some butt. She gets on the shore, and right as she gets on the shore with them, the yacht pulls up, and it's this guy walking toward her, and it is Raphael. And he's like, Kate, and he sounds very weary. It sounds like he's had a rough day. You can see it in the bubbles. He sounds like he's dying almost. And then once he gets close to her, there's blood coming out of his mouth, and there's a knife in his back. And he asks her, Kate, why did you come back? And she holds him, seems like as he's dying, unless she can get to her, to get to him in time to help him. She has a dead friend in her hands from the past. And next will be running up that hill. So we get to see what will happen with Batwoman and her new origin story, at least her new story in Rebirth.
Yeah, they hit the ground running with this book.
Yeah, as I said, I'm a fan of Batwoman. I got some pajamas actually with Batman and Batwoman on them. So this is one of my favorite books that's coming out of Rebirth. I've been waiting for this for a while. I didn't know they were going to give her own book when we first got it, but luckily to the Detective Comic books, she's got one now. So this is going to definitely be a story I'm going to be willing to get every week or biweekly.
Okay. Now, I'm not sure if this one's going to be biweekly or monthly. This one may be a monthly.
Now, well, do you know if this one's going to be the $3.99 or $2.99?
I don't know. At the moment, it's still $2.99, but that doesn't start till next month, I think.
Well, if we got time, we find it. It's definitely going to be worth the money for me.
Yeah. Well, the other book that we're going to get this week is Superman number 19, which is Superman Reborn Part 3.
And it starts off. This story's been great.
Oh, yeah. And we do get more Mixius Pitlick on this one. You get, it starts off with a flashback kind of thing, and it's basically, it's in Jonathan's head. And he's seeing his parents, and they're fading away. He's saying, come back. And then he's floating with all these family pictures floating around him. The next one, you get to Lois crying. Still, remember, the memory of John has been wiped from her head, but Superman remembers him. So she's, right now, she doesn't know what's going on. She doesn't know why are they in Clark Kent's old apartment with Superman there. And Superman starts looking for Mixie-Ass Pitlick. And he says, because remember, Mixie-Ass Pitlick wants him to play games with him.
That's all he ever
wants to play games. That's all he ever wants to do. So Superman asks him straight up, do you think this is a game? At which point he jumps in and says, Mixie-Ass Pitlick says, hey, did someone say game? and then they get just basically talking back and forth. It's like, yeah, a game. We're going to play this, but you have to actually stay here. And he's like, yeah, we played games. And Mixie-Ass Pitlick's like, yes, we used to play games. Not anymore. Then he clicks his fingers there into Mixie-Ass Pitlick's world. And they're going back and forth.
Really trippy.
Yeah, well, Superman wants to save his family. That's all he wants. He wants his family back. And Mixie says, saying, no, that's boring. Let's play some games. That's all we got to do. Play some games. And eventually you come down. He's like, Lois, he's like, fine, I'll play games with you if you let my family go. Mixie says, well, no, and I'm not going to let him go yet. We haven't played games yet. And then he tells Superman, you come with me, we'll play some games. But Superman makes a deal, says, no, Lois has to come with us also. So Mixie gives him that and says, fine. Lois and Clark and Lois, they're always together. Fine, you guys can stay together. Now, the next one we get is actually leads into this storyline we're doing with the Superman Reborn.
I was wondering if you caught that too.
Yeah. Because you find them all together, and it's saying how the two of them are always together, but the next page you get a picture of Darkseid fighting against the Justice League, looks like. And
this was that was the end of the New 52, if I'm right. That's when they were crossing back over to
the
Rebirth,
that was
right?
I believe that was the end of the Darkseid War, which I still have to read. But it says, even when all, and it says right here, this is his exact word, it says, even when all the hope and the optimism was split, and there was two of you in play, even then, no one came to save me. And he's talking about, wait a minute, two, I was split in two? And it's not clicking in him, the Superman of the New 52 universe, which he knew who he was already.
Mm-hmm.
And then they switch to the actual death of Superman that happened right before Rebirth, when he died and Lois and Lana got all the energy zapped into them. So, and then Lois notices that the red energy went into, then they fade off. And then Mixie's like, okay, let's play a game. And they're going to play at the Infinite Planet. And this is a ginormous Daily Planet skyscraper made of candy and such that Mixie put together.
Now, who could eat all that candy?
Mixie-Ass Pitlick. But
of course he can.
He says, fine, the whole rule of this game is you got to make it to the top to save John. And Superman says, fine, I've had enough. He takes off to fly to the top. And Mixie's like, no. You know that that's not that easy. So he comes up with a contract, and he says straight up that he's an imp of his word. If Superman wins and makes it to the top, he promises that he'll go far, far away. But if you lose, John stays in the fifth dimension forever. Well, you and Miss Lane are lost and forgotten, just like you left me. Because remember, he's still ticked off because he thinks Superman totally forgot about him. That's why he was captured for so long.
Right.
So, but Lois obviously tells him this is a trap, and Superman says, no, I have to try. I have to save John. So at that point, we switch back to John, and he's still floating in this realm with all the pictures, but these two energy orbs show up. And he's thinking how much misses his parents, and he hopes to be able to find them. But then he hears something, and we don't hear what it is. It's just him. He says, are you talking to me? Yes, but who are you? And then you see a picture of his parents, and it's actually the New 52 Superman and the New 52 Lois. So he's saying, talks about mom and dad, and it looks like these guys, he thinks it's actually his parents floating around in here. So he says, well, maybe if I found you guys, if you found me, then maybe we could, if these two orb things found him, maybe together they can find his parents. And at that point, he gets zapped a little bit on his finger, and we go back to the spread page of Mixie setting up a board game to play. And it goes through a bunch of different stuff of And it's just him singing his little song about being broken and all these things and how he wins. And you actually get another artist representation of the death of Superman from the 90s with the flag flying on the pole. Or with the cape flying on a pole. At which point, out of nowhere, you get Lois and Clark smashing out of the roof of the top of the Infinite Planet building and scream Jonathan, and John turns around, wait a minute, Dad, I can hear you. And Mixie's like, no, how did you do this? You're cheating. You cheated somehow. You're not supposed to be at the top. But John is still hearing them while they're doing all this. Then Mixie's all ticked off, and John is with his two little orbs, and Mixie starts changing the rules and says, no, I have a contract. You're going to play games with me. It's like they're starting to, and Lois and Superman start losing, forgetting John even more. Superman says, I can't remember his, and Jonathan remembers listening the whole time. He says, no, my name is Jonathan Samuel Kent. I'm your son. And you find out he's actually inside the globe at the top of the planet. And between him and the two orbs, he's just smashed the top of the planet building. And so he's come out, and now the orbs look like they're actually part of his fists.
And I was saying, you think this is the dead Lois and the dead Superman coming in to help him, and...
Possibly, because the next shot, you get the last shot of the book, is Lois is in one of Superman's arms, John's in the other one, and you see the New 52 Superman. And Mixie says straight up, Deja New 52.
Now, is this also the New 52 Lois, too, the one that had the powers that died in Superwoman?
Quite possibly.
That's what I was thinking, because from what they're showing in the flashbacks, Superman was dead, but that was the orb I think he was talking to. And then there was a picture of Lois, like the dead Lois from what happened in the rebirth and New 52 beginning. So
I don't know. We get, and actually, this book's already out, but the next book is Action 976. It's already out now. I've not read it yet. But then we get to see the actual conclusion, in which we know Superman has a new costume afterwards. So we don't know. Are they going to actually finally just combine the two Superman, or how is this going to work?
That's a great question. I have no idea how they're going to do that. I don't know if he's going to just be a memory in the universe. Is he going to die, or is he going to mix with them? We don't know yet.
Exactly.
I haven't opened a book, but probably after this episode, I'm going to at least look through it and maybe read a couple pages, but not all of it.
I almost went and picked it up today while we were out watching movies and stuff, but I figured I'll get it when I get all the rest of them, and we'll read them so I have it for the next week's show.
Since I have them, I am going to do this after we get done. I'm going to call them together and see how the picture looks. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. So, but that actually brings us to, we've only got one thing left for today.
Yeah, we just need to take a little visit to a certain place.
Yes, and it is time for our comic shop pull list for March 29th, 2017. Now, that was the Shazbots. They always, they're the one that they sponsor the comic shop pull list. Check them out on iTunes and Facebook and over at www.shazbots.com. Let them know the DC Superpower sent you. Now, it's that time again where it is the fifth Wednesday of a month.
Yep, so it's a little awkward.
It is annual season again. Now, we've only got three books for Rebirth out this week. We got two annuals and an actual issue, but
right.
I figured it'd be fun because we've talked about these and they're coming out. We have the Hanna-Barbera annuals, too.
Oh, yeah, and these things are just going to be nothing but fun.
Oh, yeah. But did you want to start with the first one, or you want me to?
I'll start the first one. This is the Just Leave America of Batman leading the team taking charge, and this is Extremist Part 3. The Extremists now control a nation, and within its borders of all order and protection... all but the free. But how will seven people, even the JLA, fight an entire country? And even if they could, no one can truly prepare for the catastrophic design Dream Slayer has in store for reality itself. Art done by Joe Prado, Evan Reese, and written by Steve Orlando.
Okay. The next one up on our list, we actually have Batgirl Annual Number 1. And it's Batgirl and Supergirl must team up to break into Arkham Asylum. In this all-new Rebirth annual, Batgirl must seek Supergirl's help to solve a mystery that leads them to the heart of the world of the most insane asylum there is. But what they discover and who they discover in Arkham will lead to a much, much bigger story. Now, art done by Inika Miranda, and it's written by Hope Larson. Actually, I think I'm going to have to get this one because I believe this one is going to set up what's coming in the Supergirl stories that we've been hinting at for a while.
Yeah, we have, and this
we
is
know who's hiding in, huh?
Yeah, I was going to say, well, it's going to be another Legion member.
Quite possibly, because we know who's actually in Arkham. They've been teasing this for an entire year. So it looks like we're finally getting around to the Saturn Girl storyline.
Yeah, man, I just can't believe they paced themselves out so well. We forgot, I forgot at least, a year has happened now.
Yeah. Well, we got another 2 months, but yeah.
Close enough. But next we have our Titans Annual number one. Now this, I think, is going to lead into the what we're going to have for the next story with, well, you know, Deathstroke. He's coming back. But I think it's going to lead into it right now. This is when Dick, Wally, and Garth awaken in an unfamiliar place, they find themselves face to face with their mentors. Batman, Flash, Wonder Woman, and Aquaman. Aligned together against a common foe, the mentors and the proteges must race against the clock to unlock the secrets of their current predicament and save the planet from an alien invasion. Art done by Minako Jung and written by Dan Abnett.
That's awesome. That's going to be a good book.
Oh, yeah. I was looking on here. I was like, wait a minute. They're missing one or really two characters. Green Arrow and Arsenal. Where are they at?
Yeah. Well, we've seen, I guess from, I've not read it, but from the Green Arrow books, you see that they're not really on the best of terms right now.
No, they are not. I didn't pick up the last one. I picked up the first one. Yeah, this is the return of Roy Harper, and they are not what you would think. And plus, I think they're not on here because he's not part of Justice League right now either. Everyone else there are part of the league, so I guess it might make a little bit more sense.
Yeah. Well, that brings us, that's the end of the Rebirth books, but like I said, we got four Hanna-Barbera annuals, and these are the crossovers that we've been teasing about. Now it says, the first one up is Adam Strange Future Quest Annual Number 1. This is one of the, there's two of these here, we talked about it earlier, there's two of the annuals that I was looking forward to the most, and you were looking forward to two of the other ones the most, so this worked out perfect.
And it's funny, yeah, our order went in perfect in what we want.
So, after the events of the Death of Hawkman miniseries, Adam Strange, well, the first one is Adam Strange Future Quest Number 1, Annual Number 1. After the events of the Death of Hawkman miniseries, Adam Strange is blasted through multiple dimensions only to land on Earth. There, instead of superpowered beings and legendary crime fighters, he encounters a boy adventurer and his scientist father, and they're the only ones who can help him return home. Johnny Quest, Haji, Dr. Quest, and Race Bannon have a plan, but it's going to involve a dangerous trek through Dino Boy's Lost Valley of prehistoric threats. And then remember, each of these have a backstory also. Then in the backup feature, starring Top Cat, breaking out of prison is challenging, or challenging enough for a cat. But sometimes it means stumbling through a cosmic portal to planet Earth. And right into the hands of Batman.
Of course. Wow.
Art by Steve Leiber, and is written by Jeff Parker and Mark Andreyko.
I think these backstories are going to be just as good as the main stories.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know the backstories were crossovers, too, somewhat.
I didn't know, Larry, because we read about all this stuff before, but I know when we were actually going to get that and what I'm reading in mind right now, overlooking that. Yeah. They're going to have a lot of these crossovers we did in our coverage of the news of Hanna-Barbera in these books. Just one will be the main story and one's going to be a backstory. A little shorter, but still good. Can't wait for that. This all comes out next week, guys. Next, we have Booster Gold Flintstones Annual Number 1. And by the way, these are all priced at $4.99. A little bit more, but if you're getting these stories, you're already getting a crossover and an extra story.
Yeah, you're getting a 48-page comic, too.
Yep, so it's definitely worth it. Welcome to the 25th century, where the Earth is polluted by post-industrial nightmare. Most animals are extinct, and reptilian aliens are invading cities across the planet. In the time of need, the world's citizens turn to a time-traveling Booster Gold to save the day. To learn why these aliens are seeking revenge, Booster dives deep into the prehistoric past to see what's happened to last time they hit the planet. In the bygone era, Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble must help Booster learn the truth and return to his own time, armed with information that will bring down the invaders. If Booster can convince them to help them, to help him, no problem. But we all know how persuasive Booster can be, right? Right, guys? Right? Also, in the backstory, there's a backup starring the Jetsons, and a new twist on an old twist about our future.
The Jetsons live in a world of robotics and gadgetry. But how does dying change the grandma's brain that can be digitally imprinted onto a house cleaning robot? Alrighty. Art done by Scott Hanna, Rick Lenardini, and written by Mark Russell. Now,
that's interesting.
That's very interesting. That backstory really had me scratching my head.
Does that mean
I think they're talking about, what was her name? It was Rosie. The maid.
Rosie.
Yeah, I'm thinking, was Rosie ever their grandma?
That's what I'm wondering. It looks like this new one, Rosie's going to be grandma.
They are one big family. Okay. All right. I love the Flintstones. I love the Jetsons. When we were talking about the Jetsons before, I thought we were going to get their own comic book series, but it looks like we're just going to get them in this annual, unless this could start up their own comic book series. But I am happy to see the Jetsons in all this Hanna-Barbera stuff since the rebirth. So, like I said, this is going to be one of my favorite ones to get.
Well, the next one we have up is Green Lantern Space Ghost Annual Number 1. Trapped in a strange rift in time, Green Lantern and Space Ghost are forced to battle a variety of foes, and each other. And even if they manage to survive, they will be thrown into a world with no concept of interstellar travel, or even what an alien is. Stripped of their weapons by a xenophobic culture, the duo will have to battle to regain them. But what happens when Space Ghost dons the Emerald Ring and Hal Jordan puts on the power bands? And then flipping into the backstory, you have in the backup feature, Rough and Ready were once the toast of nightclubs, variety clubs, late night chat fest, and Broadway. Learn how they became the comic duo of yesterday before they hit rock bottom today. The art here is done by Ariel Olivetti and is written by Chris Sabella and James T. Tinian IV. Now, Rough and Ready is actually a not as well known Hanna-Barbera comic or show back in the day.
Yeah, me and Ty just looked that up right here because we're like, who the heck are Rough and Ready?
Aren't they mice?
We're seeing the image. We remember them now, but yeah,
I remember them.
They were definitely lesser known. There was people or characters like Huckleberry Hound or Limpy and Lion. Then what was the other one?
Funny thing is, I was more of a fan of Rough and Ready.
Now, Rough and Ready, were they mice or what were they?
No, these were the cat and dog duo.
Oh, okay.
The mice you're thinking of, I know who you're
That's
thinking.
That's Hinky and Jinky or something like that.
Yeah, but these guys, I'm just Googling them. These guys go way back. They had these plush toys, it seemed like before a cartoon even came out, at least very poor design of plush toys. The cartoon looked a lot better. But okay, I didn't expect to hear them. I thought it would be somebody else. But the last one we have here, and this is the one I want to pick up. Of course, it's got the Suicide Squad, so of course I'm going to try to get that one. This is Suicide Squad Banana Splits Annual Issue Number 1. Suicide Splits. That's a nice title. Mistaken for metahumans thrown in the bowels of Bel-Rev, the animal rock band Banana Splits are recruited by Amanda Waller for secret mission to save the Suicide Squad. What follows is the weirdest team up you never thought you'd see. I never thought I'd even hear about this, actually, sorry. How can Flegel, Bingo, Drooper, and Snorky stand up to Harley, Deadshot, Katana, and Croc? Whew, that's really strange. And in the backup feature, Snagglepuss is a Southern Gothic playwright working with an instable cast of cultural figures exploring the intensity, creative time of New York City theater scene of the 1950s. Now, that goes back to what we covered about 2 months ago with Snagglepuss. So, it's going to be actually in this book. Once again, I thought it was going to get his own little one-shot, one-off comic book, but it's going to be featured with the rest of the Hanna-Barbera.
Well, all of these backstories may end up being their own book eventually. We know Jetsons, I believe, is coming.
Okay, so we are going to get that. And they were talking about Snagglepuss so much. I was thinking they're working really hard on this from that article we read just for this to be in one shot. So, okay. Well, we'll see all this play out in the next couple days. This is going to be out next week.
Well, who wrote the book and who did the art for it?
Ah, yes, that. Those people. Just playing with you guys. Ben Caldwell is doing the art and written by Tony Bernard.
Awesome. Well, actually, that brings us into the list, and that brings us to the end of another episode.
This was a great episode. I think the Justice League really hyped us up for this episode.
Oh, yeah.
We had a couple guests come in. The thing now, I'm just wondering, now what are we going to do for our 50th episode? And this seemed like a pretty big one.
I don't know. That's next week. We've already done a big episode this week.
Right. So, More to come, guys. So, we got material coming for you.
But before we get too far, I want to thank Mike for hanging out. Mike from Weebie Geeks. Check out Weebie Geeks, Mighty Marvel Geeks, and Wookiee Radio all over at WeebieGeeksPC.com. And Ty, thank you for hanging out with us today, man.
Oh, no, bro. Thanks for having me.
If anybody, any of the listeners actually wanted to find you, how could they find you? Other than hanging out in Vern's bedroom.
I'm on Twitter. You can look me up at _H3ARTXSS #
If anybody
yeah, I have to let y'all know I'm not ready to plug myself in like that.
I was just gonna say to help him out with that plug right there. That is on his Twitter. That's Heartless. That's for you guys that might be playing Kingdom Hearts. You'll know where that comes from.
Yeah.
Okay.
On his Instagram, once again, is Heartless.
Yes.
And on his Facebook, find Ty Graves.
Okay, I got it. Heartless for Twitter, the _Heartless for Instagram. There you go.
Cool. And Vernon, how can everybody find us?
Guys, you can find us on our social media for both Instagram and Facebook, DC Superpowers Podcast, or where you can find us at Superpowers DC. For my personal usage on Instagram, I'm Hollow Wolf, and for my Facebook, I'm Vernon McLean Moore, and also for my Twitter, I am Yellow.
Awesome. And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at GW1Ken. On Facebook, I'm Ken Rose. You can also find the show at DC Superpowers Podcast at gmail.com. We're also members of the Tangibound Network and the Weebie Geeks Network at tangiboundnetwork.com and weebiegeekspc.com. So, and with that, Vernon, I think it's about time to wrap this up for tonight.
Yes. I just want to say thanks, Mike, once again for coming on the show. Anytime, man, you want to get on here, let us know and you have a spot. Same
exactly.
Thing, Ty. Whenever you get on here, you're here. And thanks for everybody listening to us on Mixlr, for our Instagram feed, for our Twitter feed, Facebook. We appreciate you guys.
And if you guys want us to do some more Mixlr broadcasts, let us know. Let us know that that's something you're interested in doing, and maybe we'll do some more of them. So V Yellow and Vernon, it was great to have you once again. Thanks for hanging out, Ty. Thanks, Mike. And for that, Vernon, we'll see you next week. And Super Friends, we'll see you next week.
You're listening to a Weebie Geeks Network podcast.